agenda item, particularly that has been running between the policy and committee for women, children and persons with disability. And I've seen that all the members from both committees, from the public service and administration and from women, children and persons with disabilities, are all here actually in the joint committee meeting where we'll be focusing on this matter. So maybe while I do this, I've noticed that our venue is very small. You know, we need to have a much bigger venue where we could actually fit very well, because this is a large meeting. Also in the light that it's a joint meeting. But let's see how do we squash and proceed with the business of the day. I would like to make a special welcome to the minister who's present with us here, and I've seen the department, public safety and administration is all here. I've seen the advisors and the senior managers in the department, and therefore we are sincerely looking forward to having a very fruitful day. Can we request that maybe let's look into, I'll all sit comfortably, I'll just give a minute, 2 minutes settlement break, and we can be able to then start with the business of the day. We'll try to get maybe extra chairs for other members who will be coming, because I can see there was another earlier meeting, so other members might be dropping in one by one. But in the meantime, just to officially, like I said, welcome everyone else. And look at the agenda, what is it that we're going to deal with today on our agenda. But also just to verify if all of us are here and per invitation. Those of the agenda would notice that we have a packed agenda item as our first attempt. It says it will be a briefing by the Minister of Women, Children and People with Disabilities and again and Premiers on the implementation of gender equity and affirming disability mainstreaming in the public service and in the provinces. But we actually look forward to the briefing by the Minister for Public Service and Administration on the same matter, and therefore hence the department as well is here. So that we will really give maybe let's do a background after we've just gone through the approaches. We do have the Minister, if you have seen Honorable Lulu Tsingwane is here with us, and we have representation from various provinces that is here, which we'll just acknowledge, because our expectation, of course, was that we'd have the premiers or those that are representing them in the provinces. Quickly here on the apologies, we have the apology from the Minister for Public Safety and Administration, who have actually left with the President. We've got the presentation, we've got an apology again from the Deputy Minister, who's also outside the country. And then we also have apologies from the Honourable Members, that is Williams, Honourable Nyakembe, and then we also have the apology from the chairperson for the committee, portfolio committee, women, children and persons with disability, Honourable Ramdibe Dorothy. Okay, we also have some apologies from the various provinces, the Premier in Limpopo. I don't know if there's a representative, is there a representative from Limpopo? Anybody from Limpopo? Okay. And then we also have another apology from the Western Cape Premier, Honorable Zile. Is there a representative there? Their representatives at the back. Another apology. Okay, maybe let's just get an indication how many provinces are here. We have Western Cape there. The representatives, which other representatives, which province is that? Oh, Gauteng. Gauteng. Other province?
Northern Cape.
We have Northern Cape as well. Yes, ma'am. KZN is here as well. Any other province? Okay. As I said, other provinces, we have apologies. A string of apologies might take a lot of time, but there are those who really apologize, but given some reasons why they could not make it. So now, honorable members, ladies and gentlemen, can I quickly request the members to introduce themselves so that we really we just know whom are we interacting with in terms of the presentation, the input. Starting with myself, I'm Joyce Munui Moropa, the Chairperson for Public Safety and Administration. Comrade Honourable Dorothy Ramdibe has apologized due to other work. Can I then request the Honourable Kimbi and then all other members? And then
good morning. My name is Dumisane Kimbi, member of the Portfolio Committee for the Department of Public Service and Administration. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Darita Oshiro. A member of PSA. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Manana Teke. I'm the member of Women of the Committee of Women, Children and People with Disability.
Good morning. My name is Tenike Kana, member of the Portfolio Committee Women, Children and Disability.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Connie Diemu, a member of the Portfolio Committee for Women, Children, and People with Disabilities. Thank you.
Morning. My name is Sarah Porter. I'm a member of the Portfolio Committee for Women, Children, and People with Disabilities.
Morning, everybody. I'm Connie Musimani, a member of Women, Children, and People with Disabilities. Thank you.
Good morning. I'm Ipusa Celia Dicetero, member of the Women, Children and People with Disability Committee. Thank you.
Morning, Christina Morale, Portfolio Committee, Public Service and Administration.
Morning, I'm Muntu Mumaro, member of the Committee, Women, Children and People with Disability. Thank you.
Morning, I'm Emma More, Women, Children and People with Disability Committee member.
Afternoon, I'm Mina Joanna Mule Manleke, in the Public Service and Administration.
Good morning, my name is Kubis Marie. I'm a member of the Portfolio Committee, Public Service and Administration.
just mentioned that my colleague did the situation on his way, just caught up in traffic somewhere in an accident again. Thank you.
Okay, having seen that you have already started, let's quickly just take a round off of those others who are present. But maybe let's not do that. Every delegation that will present will just take us through who's present as well, so that we just know, and thereafter we can engage in discussion. Honourable members, like I indicated, we also have other member of parliament who's present with us here, who's doing the role of leading the department, which is Women, Children and Persons with Disability. Honourable Lutungwan, who's with us here. I would like to give a brief background in terms of why we actually hold this meeting today in this form that we're holding it. As Public Service Administration Portfolio Committee, we had a string of meetings where we've been focusing largely on issues of disability and issues of women. And largely, the issue of disability has been high on the agenda, based on the fact that when we do overarching oversight in terms of Section 195 of the Constitution, it has been to the attention of everyone and to the knowledge of everyone else that government has not been able to catch up with the 2% commitment that they have committed themselves to. And so part of it, we had to interrogate and look thoroughly what might be the biggest problem. And our engagement has shown us that this is one item that we consistently have to focus on. We consistently have to really engage and try and find solutions. We believe with our role of oversight, we will also put a pressure that is necessary, that will assist government to jack up wherever is necessary, so that all of us, we are able to transform our society in the form, in the manner that we expect and is envisaged. This is one of the committees that actually interacts with all, what it cast across, and we always find ourselves having to work with one committee or on the other. And on this matter in particular, we have been working closely with the Portfolio Committee for Women, Children and Persons with Disability. And our intention, because we're within one cluster as well, we're within a cluster of governance and monitoring, our intention is to consolidate particularly the class work that has happened, because we've seen it to be a more effective way of dealing with oversight as the committee. We will actually in future see many more committees like SCOPA being part of this committee, like Auditor General being here, because all of them, actually it's a string of them that falls within governance and monitoring, and therefore I think it's going to be an efficient way for Parliament to deal with this oversight. You know, because part of it is to reduce calling the departments from this committee and this one, you know, where sometimes we can be able maybe to collaborate in terms of dealing with these aspects jointly. So as a matter of principle, again, those who know, this meeting was originally planned to have taken place in August. And you know that August normally we're celebrating our women's activities. But also we take stock in terms of how far have we gone as government, you know, to really, from 1994 up to today, how far have we gone, you know, to transform society along the areas that I've already mentioned. And therefore, part of it would be to celebrate the good things that we're doing, because normally as Parliament, we see like, we don't appreciate what government does, which is good. We only focus on those that are negative. And I always indicate, particularly to the department that we oversee, that you know what, we normally don't worry about what we do well, because we want it to be that way. We'd always pick up on something that we feel a little bit uncomfortable. It's not necessarily meaning that we do not appreciate, but it means we say, let's check up on those areas, and that's how we complement one another in terms of ensuring that we deliver what we promise that people that we actually do for them. And that's the role of government, that's the role of Parliament, you know, in alive, you know, on its work. So based on this the few background that I'm indicating that there has been an issue around the issue of disability, not you know, not having some progress, some of the issues might come as progress to the meeting, particularly on the disability. The very last meeting we had was really giving that so much being picked up, and therefore our expectation that we should grow, there must be progression. You know, once we always call meetings, we don't call them to repeat most of the time, but to remember we're a joint committee. So sometimes we'd want to catch up with one another in terms of our understanding so that we move forward and guide the entire cluster of governance in terms of how far are these matters as the committees that are present here. So along that, our expectation is that particularly those key issues that were captured on disability, we don't lose them. You know, because we believe most of them can develop into a plan of action that we can activate and show the people out there as Parliament, as the government that is designed for them. We care about them, and we're having a hand that wants to reach to them. So that's a message basically that has to always be sent. We are established for a reason, and the reason is to ensure that we deliver for the people out there. So with this short background that I have indicated, I would then like to request those that are required to do the presentation to be ready. I can see the Department of Public Safety and Administration will be the first one to kickstart with the presentation, and it will be followed by women, children, and disabilities. But before they start with the presentation, I would like to allow the minister to just have a word in terms of the work, in terms of just introducing what the topic and the subject is all about, and therefore allow the proceedings to take form of having the TPSA presenting this, followed by the Department of Public Service and Administration. Minister Kamwana.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chairperson, I think when we do the presentation, it is important for us to look at the 20-year span of the new democracy in South Africa and look at what has been done, of course, starting off with our Constitution and Bill of Rights, which have been commended the world over, also looking at our policies, the legislation that we have passed over the years that have empowered women, but also to say that some of the programs that we have introduced have been recognized the world over as best practice. South Africa is seen as one of the leading countries on the African continent, but also internationally on gender issues. We are also seen as the best practice in terms of policy as far as people with disabilities are concerned. We are one of the first countries to have a ministry or a department dedicated to people with disabilities, and right now we have 16 representatives, public representatives in this house, in Parliament, but also overall 96 public representatives all over the country. We do have challenges that we are grappling with. Firstly, as far as women and children are concerned, we are faced with the scourge of violence and abuse, including rape and murder of women and children. And the government is working hard through collaborative programs, joint action, to fight this scourge. But we also still have challenges where people with disabilities, the majority are still unemployed, many of them have not had the opportunity to go to school. So those are the challenges that we are faced with as government, working together with the stakeholders to ensure that we mainstream, to ensure that we empower through the opportunities that have been opened by government. Lastly, Chairperson, I just want to say that I was informed when I came in the meeting that provinces were asked to send reports to the department, but not received reports. So maybe we could ask provinces to do brief presentations after our report, so that we don't leave them outside. I apologize for that.
It's a challenging request from the minister that provinces need to to that. Hey, Minister, it might be a bit of a problem here. Yeah, because actually the nine of them are going to take all the time for the two presentations that are already done. That are here. Okay. You know what? Maybe what you can do, you know, can you allow maybe the presentation to go through? Those that are here, if they will give them 5 minutes each at the end of the presentations to sort of deal with matters that they would need to quickly leave. I want to believe that maybe the presentation from the minister might cover some other areas that relates to provinces and ministers. But surely we are starting on a bad note where we had a special request as Parliament for a particular reason. And therefore, as you know, to hear that the provinces did not submit the presentation, I think we are not taking kind to that as members of Parliament. You know, because part of it, like I'm saying, the reason was in order to consolidate and have an overarching understanding what is happening in the country. Like we talk about Section 195, we talk of an overarching oversight. I think it's a matter that we would need to attend to and really. If Parliament requests presentations to be sent to the minister and they get consolidated and get the information, it's a request that has to be met. And we shouldn't allow that provinces should believe that they've got license fair of not complying once Parliament requests them to do something. And therefore, we have serious reservation with that attitude. We would look into it. We don't want to spoil our meeting, you know, but I can see it can result in spoiling the meeting where people don't really want to respond to the request. By following our task, we're supposed to really deal with the task of oversight, and it has to be, you know, the other side should, we should get a response. Nonetheless, let's see how far to the, I can see your hand is up.
Yes, thank you, Chairperson. I'm MEC 26 for MEC for Social Development, KwaZulu-Natal. I'm representing the Premier here. We did receive the letter, and we did send our presentation to the email address that is in the letter. I think that's our problem. The email address that is in the letter, we did send our presentation.
It's to you.
It shows that there might be a little bit of communication. Okay, let's not blame anyone for now, but proceed with the meeting. But to understand that the provinces might definitely have complied. I know they can't defy to that level. I was surprised, actually. But nonetheless, it shows that possibly there was a mismatch in terms of communication. We should definitely have to tighten it down and fix it. Okay. Thank you. Honourable members, let's proceed then. Can you allow the Department of Public Safety and Administration to immediately tell us who's there and then take us through their presentation at the beginning of the information, including what the minister has opened with the information that we're going to interact with as members of Parliament.
Good morning. Thank you very much, Madam Chair. Honourable members, Minister for Women, Children and People with Disabilities. Madam Chair, I'm here together with officials from the department itself, DPSA, the Chief Director, Director responsible for diversity management in the department, as well as officials from the Ministry for Public Service and Administration. By the way, I'm Kenny Govinder, the PDG responsible for Human Resource Management and Development. First, I must express our sincere thanks to DPSA for this opportunity to present jointly with the Department for Women, Children and People with Disabilities. It's definitely a pleasure for us to do this because it's an area of work that DPSA within the public service is experiencing a great deal of difficulty, and hopefully this joint engagement will build on further opportunities for us to start collaborating and working together in a more constructive way. Yes, we've been working very closely in the past together, and I think we need to build on those relationships to ensure we meet our targets that we've set ourselves. The presentation I'm going to do this morning focuses specifically on the public service and administration. We give the figures both for national and provincial in terms of where we are. And I must at the outset indicate that the public service, in terms of meeting the target that we set ourselves, we've been making very slow progress in terms of achieving that. And that's a challenge we're hoping jointly between ourselves and the Department for Women, Children and People with Disabilities will be able to make bigger and quicker strides towards achieving the target. The presentation, as I indicated, mine will deal specifically with the public service and the figures in terms of progress. and the Department for Women, Children and People with Disabilities will speak to all the challenges and the possible solutions where we can then jointly put in place initiatives to address them. Chair, going into the presentation itself, I'm not going to read through all of those things, but simply to indicate that as part of the introduction, this presentation builds on presentation we've done in March of 23rd to the Portfolio Committee. And the presentation now talks to how we progress in terms of the statistics from that date. It also looks at some of the activities and initiatives that as DPSA we put in place to try and support departments to a large extent, the implementers. Departments are the implementers and we deal with the policy environment in ensuring that we meet these targets. And at the end of the day, we'll also show how these things have contributed, both in terms of gender mainstreaming and gender targeting, as well as disability management in the public service, as to whether it's making any difference in terms of where we want to be. It must be noted that there are a number of key pillars to address both policy projects and programs for inclusivity, gender equality, and disability management in the public service. And in that area, we look at four key areas in particular. Enabling environment, which is largely the responsibility of DPSA together with the Department for Women, Children and People with Disability. DPSA in terms of policy and practices specific to the public service, the department in terms of legislative framework and policies and practices that cover the country as a whole. So we basically support one another in terms of building on it, but largely drawing from the department and their national policies and practices that we need to implement within the public service and support departments and monitor and drive implementation. In regard to enabling environment, we look at addressing stigma and discrimination within the public service. We look at sensitization to remove stereotyping and attitudes, providing adequate resources, and we do engage, I think, at a number of levels at MTEC, the medium-term expenditure committees, to ensure there's funds and available, as well as the policies that we put in place to ensure resources are there. Conducting continuous audits and research, we monitor on a regular basis across the public service. The equality of opportunities is an area we focus on as well in relation to promoting human resource and social justice, promoting equality and equity and equality, understanding and addressing diverse needs. Mainstreaming is a core field of work we do, all of this, both in terms of gender equality within the public service as well as disability and disability management within the public service, it's the element of mainstreaming. It needs to be considered in all aspects of the work we do. The policies that a department develops must be sensitive to both gender issues as well as disability. It cannot be seen as a separate item. Whether it's in recruitment or whether it's in terms of training and development or in terms of career pathing, the issues around gender and disability must be taken into account as part of the mainstreaming exercise. And then finally is to ensure that we have a barrier-free access within the workplace. And that deals with reasonable accommodation, providing systemic and uniform guidelines, participation and inclusivity. You notice in all four of those pillars, DPS has developed policy and practices to guide the implementation within the public service. Madam Chair, the next slide simply gives a position as to where we are in terms of the target, and remember we set ourselves our target of 50% women at senior management level within the public service. This is a consolidated picture as to public service and where we are at this point. You notice departments, we've broken this up into national departments and provinces. The national average, overall average is 39.1, but we're still approximately 10%, or just around 11% short of the target of 50%, but it must be indicated since 1994 and since the decision of the 50%, we've made steady progress in terms of moving towards the 50%, and we still have a little way to go, and the indication from this graph really shows that every single department on an annual basis is moving closer towards the target, except for one or two departments that have small changes downwards. But overall, the indications are that we are moving in the right direction. This simply gives an indication of the representation per salary level at SMS, and you'll notice that as at the end of June 2013, there were 9,130 filled SMS positions in the public service, of which 3,576 were women, and that gives us a 39.1% representation at SMS level. The other figures give you the levels in terms of 13, 14, 15, and 16. We must indicate this junction, as the Public Service and Administration, we are concerned that the majority of women that are employed at senior management level are at the lower levels, at levels 13 and 14, and very few at the levels 15 and 16. It's an area we've identified, and it's an area we've taken up through the last presentation to Cabinet as part of our reporting to Cabinet as well, and to draw Cabinet's attention to the fact that we have very few women at DDG level and at Director General level in the public service. It's interesting to note that no province has reached the 50% mark, and that's a concern to us, both at national level or at the provincial level, that 50% is a concern. Gauteng, however, retains a top-performing position and seems to be doing very well relative to the other departments in terms of achieving the 30%, and Free State at the bottom end. If you look at this chart again, you'll notice Gauteng is at 42.9, 43%, very short way to go to get to the 50%, and Free State is at 31.7%. Okay, it's easy to monitor the statistics, but at the same time, we have a responsibility of playing a supportive role in the public service as DPSA, in working with departments to ensure that we try and achieve these targets. In particular, the gender program activities, this particular slide speaks to the various things that at DPSA we are doing to support departments in getting to the target. In 2011, the DPSA conducted a survey to address the extent of gender mainstreaming in the public service and to obtain baseline information on gender mainstreaming trends, identify critical barriers. It's important for us to understand what is preventing us getting there so that we can correct them. And areas that need strengthening to advance women's empowerment and gender equality. The survey report has been printed and distributed. This is on out to everyone. I think we sent copies to Parliament as well of this particular report. The DPSA presented a 2011-2012 Employment Equity Report for the Public Service to Cabinet in November 2012. Cabinet approved the decision to hold DGs accountable for equity targets, and I think this is an important point to make. In the Cabinet decision of November 2012, the Minister then subsequently wrote to all executive authorities, bringing their attention to the decision of Cabinet, and at the same time, the Director General for the Department of Public Service and Administration wrote to all Director Generals and heads of departments in government, drawing their attention to this decision. What we've done is we're going to hold heads of departments responsible in terms of meeting this target of 2% and 50%. We've also taken it a step further, Madam Chair, and we've included it in the PMDS, the Performance Management Development System for the heads of departments. It becomes one of the assessment criteria to ensure that they meet it. And we further taken it and put it as indicators in the management performance assessment tool that is implemented by the Department for Performance Monitoring and Evaluation. So departments are assessed against the target as well. We are hoping that will contribute in terms of drawing awareness to the targets and achieving the targets going forward. We've also seen a drastic increase in the compliance rate in relation to the Public Service Women in Management Week across the public service, which has increased from a compliance rate of 11% in 2011 to 61.1% from both national and provincial departments. So it's shown a drastic increase in compliance. As I indicated, DPSA provides regular monitoring, evaluation, and support to departments. And what we tend to do at the moment, Madam Chair, we focus on those departments that are way below the figures. We focus at women at SMS at 30%, so departments that have not achieved the 30% level, and why are they not getting a 30%? We require them to develop and implement immediate plans, and we do the same with departments that have not achieved the 1%, at least 1% for people with disabilities. Finding from the gender mainstreaming survey, this was the survey that I referred to earlier, it gives us some indication as to why there are some and what are some of the challenges within the public service. The first point that we want to raise here, that the report showed us that 66.6% of departments have gender units, which is a positive sign that many of the departments are now put in place gender units, and we can see this is bearing fruit. One of the problems is that there's no uniformity in staffing and technical expertise in terms of the competence of the people that are within this unit. For this reason, this does not translate into better mainstreaming of gender in departments. If you don't have qualified, technically skilled people with dedicated units driving gender mainstreaming, then it does not happen at the department level. And that's one of the key challenges we've picked up. The gender mainstreaming survey and the public service women management week report also show that the location of gender units in departments was not uniform. Most of the units were not located in the office of the DG or head of department as provided for in the national policy framework on the empowerment of women and gender equality. That again is a challenge. If it's not in the head of department, then it's not taken because it's not driven by the head. So it's a challenge. And we are busy working with departments to try and improve the location. We found in some extreme cases, and that's worth to note, that we're supposed to coordinate and monitor the provincial programs. It's important for this unit also to be located within the Premier's office. We found in some cases that that's not the case. It was located, for example, Department of Social Development, some of them open. I'm not saying it's not ideal, it's not working, but we're saying we found that that is not the correct way of doing it. The ideal and the correct practice would be that the Premier's office would have greater influence in the coordination at a provincial level. Northwest Province has since moved back to office of the Premier. And we can see, Madam Chair, if you look at the statistics and the figures, where it's at the level of the Premier's office, you see slightly better figures in relation to the others. The staffing of these units is not uniform. The majority at heads of units at different levels. Majority of them are below SMS level, with very few having them at director and chief directors as heads of these units. We also found a challenge with the budgeting. There were no dedicated funds assigned for these gender units at departmental level. And it becomes then a challenge. Whenever there's a shortage of funds, the first place we look for money is the gender unit, the training unit, and so on. So the money is moved across, and it becomes a challenge. DPSA has since also, in supporting departments, has put in place a number of policies, and this is part of our responsibilities of creating a policy, creating an enabling environment. But we acknowledge as DPSA that simply putting in place policies and practices is not an answer to, or not a panacea to all of the problems that we find ourselves in. We spend a lot of time in supporting practical, physical support to departments in achieving our targets. So it's not simply the question of putting in policies and practice across the board. We also play a role in supporting departments in building the skills and capacity. We're also working with a new school of government in terms of addressing some of these challenges, and I'll speak to some of the figures since 2012. We play a constructive role in terms of monitoring and evaluation and providing support both to departments as well as to outside agencies. We have developed very good partnerships and working relations with the following structures to promote effective monitoring and support for the public service. The Department of Monitoring and Evaluation, as we indicated, we've now included in the MPAT indicators on women and people with disabilities, and you'll notice many of the departments fare poorly if they've not met that target. And from our indications at this stage and from the analysis, remember DPSA participates in the monitoring and the moderation of the scores. Departments do a self-assessment where they give us the results, and based on our analysis, we do the moderation jointly with DPME. And in that moderation process, one of the things that becomes clear is departments that fare well in terms of meeting the target fare well in all other compliance areas as well, which is a positive sign, and I think that's coming through as well. We participate on the Commission for Employment Equity. Ms. Barbara Watson, the Chief Director in the Department for Public Service Administration, is one of the commissioners on this particular committee, so we have that interface and we'll be able to receive information from them as well. And as we indicated, we have a very close working relationship with the Department for Women, Children and People with Disabilities on disability management intervention as well as gender intervention for the public service. And I think this presentation jointly here today also demonstrates that working together relationship. With regard to disabilities, Madam Chair, Honourable Members, you will notice that this is an area which is of huge concern to all of us seated here today. It's an area that we've made very little progress. And to a large extent, we're well short of the 2% target. And it's an area that we want to make greater progress, and we'll demonstrate some of the things we're doing. The percentage as at June 2013 sits at 0.4% relative to the 2% that we set ourselves. This slide simply gives a representation of persons with disabilities at various levels in the public service. In other words, it's an indication that people with disability are appointed across the public service from senior management level all the way down to lower level, although the majority of them are at lower levels, not at senior management level. I'm not going to read through all of those figures, Madam Chair. I think they're there and the presentation has been shared. It's important to note that there's a number of compliance requirements that departments need to meet, and we believe that compliance with the Job Access and Gender Equality Strategic Framework will also give us an indication as to the commitment to the mainstreaming of gender and disability in departments. And since the MPAT process and since the activities of GPSA in supporting departments, we've seen an improvement in the compliance in relation to the Job Access and Gender Equality Strategic Framework. This gives an indication. Western Cape, for example, all 11 departments have submitted, 5 signed, 6 not signed. Free State, all 10 departments have submitted. There are 1 or 2 departments that have not submitted in terms of compliance rates, and those are the departments that we are working with to improve compliance going forward. Overall, I think it's an area of concern in terms of some of the compliance levels in some of the provinces. Madam Chair, as I indicated up front, yes, we monitor on a quarterly basis the progress in terms of the 2% and 50% from the GPSA perspective. Based on those analyses, we then write to individual departments requesting them to provide us with remedial plans as to how are they going to get to the 50% and 2%. And in this regard, we give an indication here of the number of departments that we've written to. And we are busy working with, in the Northern Cape, there's 8 in relation to the 1%, in relation to the 2%. The reason why we put 1% here, we're saying at least get to the 1%, and then we can move to the 2%. So we're starting lower. And the second part of it is we want departments that are below 3% to get to at least the 30%, and then we can progress to the 50%. So it's a progressive approach to trying to get to the 50% and 2%. And those are the departments we are working with across the board. We do conduct an analysis of the remedial plan. We've noticed that there is an improvement in departments that are implementing remedial plans. Slide 10 above indicates that representation of persons with disabilities has improved in all 7 provinces and national departments. Only 2 provinces remained at the same percentage. So the idea of putting in place a remedial plan and monitoring those remedial plans is bearing some fruit from our side. In slide 4, improvements were in 6 provinces and nationally, and a decrease in 3 provinces. These are provinces that also indicated to us that there is a moratorium in the filling of SMS positions. So, Chair, I think that also contributes, in a sense, to the achievement of the target where departments do not have sufficient funds to fill some of the vacancies.
May I need to repeat that point that you took in?
The point I'm making is that one of the challenges in terms of achieving the target is that some departments are experiencing challenges with the filling of positions, particularly from the perspective of lack of funds. And because there's insufficient funds in some provinces and there's moratorium on the filling of positions, it then contributes to meeting the 50% target and the 2%. Where they argue they're filling no positions and therefore they cannot get to the targets that they want to get to. In relation to capacity development, discussions have been initiated with the Deaf Institute for the intake of deaf interns that are being trained by the Institute, and we will then place them within the public service. That work is at an advanced level, and we will report to the next meeting in terms of progress. Madam Chair, I think even in our presentation from our colleagues at the Department of Women, Children, People with Disabilities, we'll speak about other initiatives around learnerships, internships, and so on, that the Department of Public Service and Administration and the public service as a whole can contribute to. Remember, we are the single largest employer in the country. So all of those interventions will assist us in drawing numbers into the public service. Since 2012, the DPSA jointly with Palama has trained 764 employees in disability management course. And I think that's also contributing in terms of building capacity of public service and management of disability across the public service. What are the latest developments from our side to support the initiative to increase the figures in the public service? The policy and procedure in the management of sexual harassment in the public service was approved. We will commence with the rollout in November. One of the reports that we get from departments is the reluctance of persons with disability to disclose disabilities as they feel the personnel questions are discriminatory and too invasive. and to correct this. And Madam Chair, Honourable Members, I think this is an important point to note, that we also believe that there's underrepresentation of figures in terms of people with disability in the public service. In most cases, the figures that we have on personnel are physical and visual impairments. In other words, it's disabilities that one can see and one knows about. But the psychosocial disabilities are not reported, and they're not captured. And that's largely because of the way the personnel is currently constructed in terms of reporting of that. And we're now in the process of correcting and cleaning up personnel and changing the questions, and we're now linking it to the international best practice in this regard. The challenges that we face, and I think my colleagues will speak later to the challenges and these issues as to going forward. For both disability and gender, the absence of sector-specific legislation, and our colleagues will speak to the legislation they're currently working on, which will assist us as DPSA. The target of 50% and 2% is a cabinet decision, and it's not legislated in any way, and therefore it becomes difficult to hold people accountable in relation to those figures. But I think our colleagues, in terms of the work they're doing, will assist us. The role of oversight bodies in enforcing accountability by departments that are not complying with policies will also assist. This particular meeting, Madam Chair, we greatly welcome, because it strengthens the work of DPSA by portfolio committee holding provinces accountable for implementing this, helped us and strengthens the work as DPSA. We also work closely with the Public Service Commission as part of their oversight responsibility to monitor the implementation of these policies and to achieve the targets, and various other bodies, as well as through the Employment Equity Commission that Ms. Barbara Watson serves on. All of these oversight bodies support the work that we do and also strengthens the work that we do. What is the way forward from our side? There's a perception that the attrition rate of persons with disabilities in the public service is very high, and the DPSA, as part of its work plan this year, will undertake a study to establish. And I think in discussion with our colleagues at Department of Women, Children and People with Disability, is an area we need to work very closely and see how we can collaborate our efforts and get a single report that addresses this. Is it the musical chair syndrome, or are people definitely coming into public service indeed? So it's an area we need to address and get a sense of what the challenge is so we can grow on it. As I indicated, the consolidation of the working relationship is definitely there. The consolidation with the Department of Labor in terms of the Employment Equity Act and figures and statistics, as well as the Commission for Employment Equity, as well as Statistics South Africa, in terms of getting more reliable data to assist us in better recording the information before us. You know, when we speak about psychosocial disabilities and correct reporting in relation to that, when we look at GEMS statistics, you pick up the trends in terms of medication, but you don't see the same in relation to the figures in the public service. So it's an area that we want to strengthen and try and get figures right. With that, Madam Chair, I think from the DPSA, our presentation, as I indicated, will focus specifically on the public service. But we want to indicate, yes, as the DPSA, we are trying to achieve the target of 2% and 50%, but we are making very slow progress across the public service in trying to get there. Thank you very much, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much for that presentation, which is giving us a very broad view in terms of where we are, and I think it was thoroughly captured in terms of giving us various areas, and we therefore appreciate it. But based on this presentation that has been done by Mr. Govenda, I just wonder if shouldn't we then proceed with the next presentation, because we already have that picture, possibly then looking into also other initiatives from the side of the department. If honorable members agree in that approach, maybe let me find out if are the honorable members comfortable that we go to the second presentation and get the entire picture, or focus on that, or should I just proceed and request the presentation? Thanks. Proceed, Ms. Senba. Don't forget to introduce your delegation.
Thank you, Chair. Minister, you want to introduce Dr.
Yes. I'm here with a very lean delegation. Ms. Lydia Pretorius, who is Chief Director responsible for monitoring and evaluation of our programs on people with disabilities. I also have Ranji Reddy, who is Chief Director, also monitoring and evaluation, responsible for women empowerment and gender equality. I think Chairperson, I have made a brief introduction. I will allow them to go into the details. Maybe I will come back when we have questions for discussion. Over to Ranji, will start on gender equity program. Thank you.
Good morning, Chair. Thank you, Minister. Good morning, Chair. Good morning, Honourable Members of Parliament. We collaborated with the DPSA on actually providing statistics to the committee, but when we saw the presentation from DPSA yesterday, we decided that we shall not repeat ourselves, but that we will focus on an area that looks at explaining some of the interventions that we are undertaking, so that we can actually begin to drive towards these targets. So you might find that you had an older version of the presentation, but we have now changed it into a new presentation that is provided to the committee. What we're going to focus here on, given that Kenny has provided such a detailed analysis of figures in terms of actual equity targets, that is the mandate of the DPSA. What we would like to focus on is a little bit more on empowerment issues. So what we will start off with is to share with you a little bit about the enabling policy and the legislative environment, and look at the successes that have taken place in that regard over the last 20 years. We will look at the issues of empowering women and people with disabilities. We look at what are the public service interventions, and we can look at very briefly what are some of the big impacts of these situations. Of course, we will also highlight some of the challenges and some of the measures to address these challenges. We start, of course, as Minister referred to the Constitution with his Bill of Rights. But flowing from that, there's been a very progressive legislative framework that the country has put in place, and you'll find that a number of acts directly pertain to the issue of equity targets in terms of disability and gender. But focusing particularly on certain policy measures, we have the white paper on the Integrated National Disability Strategy, which was adopted in 1997. And then there's the Employment Equity Act. We also have the PEPUDA, or the Promotion of Equality and Prevention of Unfair Discrimination Act. And then there's a National Policy for Women Empowerment and Gender Equality that was adopted by Cabinet in 2000. Now, there's of course a number of pieces of legislation which we're not going to highlight here, but these were specifically targeting at the issue of gender equity and disability equity. As a country, we've also undertaken to be part of several international, continental, and sub-regional treaties which we ratified and we are implementing and we're domesticating in the country. Just to mention, we do focus on CEDAW, on the Beijing Platform for Action, the SADC Protocol on Gender Development, the AU Protocol, a Women's Protocol, the Solemn Declaration of Heads of State, the MDGs, the International Convention on Population Development, and then we have the Convention on Children's Rights, and we have the Convention on the Rights of People with Disabilities. And you'll find that in some of these conventions or treaties, there are actual targets on the 50%. And such an example is that of the SADC Protocol, which directly addresses the issue of 50% representation of women in political and all decision-making structures, and also has a time frame of 2015. What we have done as well as a country is we're putting forward a Women's Empowerment and Gender Equality Bill, which we'll talk to a little bit later. We're currently focusing on on a national disability rights policy, which will focus on equality of outcome and focusing on minimum norms and status, to which Lydia will speak more about. We're also looking at, in the future, a transversal disability rights legislation. There's, of course, sector policy and sector legislation. When I say sector legislation, there are specific targets that address these equity measures. And then as a department, we've actually put forward a number of strategies that we have an overriding mainstreaming framework. It's an integrated mainstreaming framework that speaks to the issues of gender and disability, inclusive of equality and equity measures. And then we're looking at mainstreaming of gender and disability consideration with impact indicators into the current process that we are embarking on as government, that's the MTSF 2014 to 2019. And the department is looking at all 14 proposed outcomes. Just to give you a very quick background on the 50-50, this principle is in line with the decision that was taken by the AU in 2002, the Durban decision, in which they looked at the percentage of women in the commission. And they upped their target to 50%, and that carried forward on the continent. So, of course, the Heads of State Solemn Declaration then carried that 50-50, which we need to report on. The decision that Cabinet also took in terms of the 50-50 is aligned to the SADC Protocol on Gender and Development with the target date of achievement by 2015. What he's saying is that the Minister of Women, Children and People with Disabilities is a champion of the 50% gender parity program, but it is the Department of Public Service and Administration that has a mandate to implement this representation of women at SMS levels in the public service. Hence, you will see the kind of collaborative presentation today. What we would like to do is share with you overall achievements in terms of the representation of women in the country so that it helps to contextualize what Kenny says, rather than us looking at, yes, we have not met the 50%, but how do we showcase the context in terms of the progress we have made with the public service? And I'll start at the political decision-making level. In pre-1994, we stood at 2.7% women in parliament. The country is currently standing between 40 to 45%, making us, and that is both of women in the cabinet, of deputy ministers in the executive level, as well as women in the legislature at the national level. It makes us fourth on the OECD Social Institutions and Gender Index. In Africa, we actually are lying number two in terms of women representation at the political level. We are lying sixth on the Global Economic Index Gap Report. So internationally, our achievements are really noted. It's a remarkable achievement, and we use as examples of best practice. We also find that South African women are actively recruited for senior positions internationally and on the continent. And we've had the case about 2 months ago of the executive director of UN Women, who's South African women. We've got a number of women also at different at different positions in UN agencies. So we have that to go about in the rest of the world. But at the national level, it's women are holding very senior positions in both the public and the private sectors. And we can look at the CEO of the Johannesburg Stock Exchange, a woman. The Governor General, just to mention but two, is a woman, and we can go on and on and on. Heading up by the Women's Health Minister. In public sector, Kenny raised the point that currently, July 2013, we stand at 39.1% women in SMS levels. It's something that we need to actually be proud of. If we benchmark this against global achievements, you find perhaps we actually are doing very well in terms of the representation of women in the public service. One of the countries that can talk about women in decision-making positions is Norway. And they can actually quote about women on board because of the decision they've taken in terms of enforcement. but many other countries do not come even close to this percentage. So if you take it in that context, the South Africa is doing very well. If you want to only look at it in terms of 50%, you will not see the progress that we can actually speak about as a country. At the private sector level, women as chairpersons are currently standing at about 5.1%, and women CEOs are at about 3%, and that we're saying is yes on the very low side. There are about 17% women directors. While it's at the low side, what you're also noting is that there is an upward trend. There is very gradual progress, very slow, but there is an upward trend. So what we're saying is that there are measures that we're beginning to put in place that will begin to look at fast-tracking that process. We're talking about judiciary as well. We say that the focus, the current focus on the judiciary, on the transformation of the judiciary, has to be in terms of the appointment of women judges. It's constantly on the radar, with discussions focusing on how more women can be supported into these positions in the future. But let us not only focus on that as a negative element. What we want to highlight is that we came from almost 0%, there was only one women judge pre-1994, and we now stand at 30% women in the judiciary. That is something that is a progress. Yes, we might not be at 50%. Yes, we would like to see more women judges, but we also need to say, yes, as a country, we are doing quite well. We need it faster, but we're doing well in representation. The latest MDG report shows that more women are entering tertiary institutions and that more women are graduating with post-matric qualifications, including up to the doctorate level. And that is something that the President has now handed over in September to the UN. And what we also see in the MDG report is that there are more women entering areas of research, and it's not necessarily in the previously soft areas, but that women are getting into the science areas. We are also seeing positive trends in the country in the number of girls entering fields of study or work previously dominated by men, especially in what we call STEM areas, which is science, technology, education, and mathematics. Why am I raising all of this? I want to contextualize science, technology, engineering, mathematics. Why I'm saying this is that I want to contextualize that the achievement towards 50% is very possible, given that there is a lot of focus on preparing people into certain areas that can begin to take these positions. One of the things that are going to assist in the process in terms of reaching the 50% and perhaps pushing the 2%, because we also need to speak about women with disabilities in that whole target, is going to be the Women Empowerment and Gender Equality Bill. The enactment of this bill will focus on both the public and private bodies as it's defined in the bill. It will seek to attain progressive realization of the minimum of 50% representation, but it also points out a meaningful participation of women in decision-making status. And that includes boards, and it also includes the judiciary in the world. It also highlights issues, it also speaks to the issues of building women's capacity to participate, as well as it speaks to providing supporting mechanisms for women. This bill will allow for enforcement, which is currently the gap that we're experiencing. How do we enforce this principle with authority? The bill is not just about pushing for equity, as in numbers, but it's pushing for substantive equality in the situation. And then to also look at the issue that Benny spoke about in terms of gender mainstream, the Women Empowerment and Gender Equality Bill is also legislating for gender mainstreaming across both the private and public bodies. Furthermore, the bill will provide for regulations of institutional mechanisms, which speak to the challenge that Kenny raised on the gender focal point, the gender units, the rank, and the location. And if we can put out regulations, it will help to address some of these issues. It means that in the future, we can regulate for these positions. In addition, the bill calls for regulations on the minimum competencies for such positions. So in other words, by virtue of being a woman, you don't necessarily have to be a gender focal point. Or it doesn't have to get dumped into the HR sector, or into situations where people have a whole basket of issues to deal with, or put into a situation where lower ranking officials are expected to be a gender focal point. So regulations will actually help to push this. We want to also highlight, Chairperson, that these are some of the measures we are looking at that begin to assist the process of reaching our targets. We work with girls in terms of career development, and there is currently a project the department is involved in called Tech the Girls. Now, Tech the Girls project is about job shadowing, and it's cutting across not just areas of science or technology, engineering, mathematics. Minister has now even taken the project into the mining level, but we're also beginning to look at the corporate world. And so this project is yielding results, where girls are being able to have career development, career choices. This project has become a best practice. First of all, in 2011, it was showcased internationally at the United Nations, and we were lauded for that as a best practice. It's currently being taken by UNICEF as a showcase to the rest of the world on some of the measures that could be put in place to develop girls and young women. We also actively participate, we actively support the Selfie Take a Girl Out to Work program. And you know, that has really become an institutionalized program in the country. Now that is career development. That will empower young girls into positions that would then help to close the targets. In terms of young women, we are working with young women to address issues of empowerment, and this includes us working with young women with disabilities. We've had a number of sessions, discussion forums with young women, where it was very interactive. We were able to discuss challenges they face, what opportunities exist, and then we look at embarking on working with them directly from the department. So there is that focus on young women as well. We've got a very big working program with rural women, and we're looking at empowering them. And we believe that one of the spin-offs of empowering rural women would be that there would be a long-term investment in terms of the impact they have on their daughters, in terms of their empowerment, so that they can begin to be our future workforce. So, and you know that research shows that educated women have influence on the type of empowerment in terms of their children. We also, and of course, we have a huge focus on economic empowerment of women. We're doing a number of things with economic empowerment of women. We work with DTI on women cooperatives. We work with rural women in different projects throughout. There's a whole lot that we could report on that. But what he's saying is that our underlying emphasis is that it's a long-term investment for our future workforce of women. We also believe that empowered women will find it easier to avail themselves for senior positions in the workforce. So we need to empower young women now so that at later stages they find it easier to take over in senior positions. And that would be because they'd be able to hold their own in an environment that is dominated by men. At the department, we've also worked with the WhatsApp Foundation, and we looked at the gender-responsive budgeting. And Ken was raising the issue of you know, ring-fencing budgets for gender and disability. And we did look at the gender-responsive budgeting in four departments, of which we have a report that's currently going through to Cabinet. And it showed us some, you know, some really good things done in some departments. We also collaborate with Palama in continuing the training that Kenny is talking about in terms of gender mainstreaming. And what we've also done is ensured that there is a module on gender response budgeting in that training. So the department is focusing on that. And then we need to also highlight that there are some departments in government that are actually grooming and actually training a pool of middle managers, especially women, to an executive management training course. And I'd like to highlight the situation of the Department of Correctional Services. You know, it's actually developing a pool of middle managers so that it can begin to address its current situation with its equity targets. Thank you, Chair. I'm going to
I'm going to stop on the gender issues and hand over to this one.
Thank you, Chair. I'm going to continue on the same approach that Ranji had in terms of saying we created demand by putting a target of 2%. When we go and try and see why the target is not being met, we get various statements being made around people are not applying, people that apply do not have the requisite skills. Disabled people are saying to us, I don't apply because my transport is too expensive, because I forgot to arrange special transport, and the salaries that I can be employed at doesn't cover that cost. So we took it to say, what are we doing as a country and as a department on addressing those external factors that would then impact on us being able to accelerate achieving employment equity? Before I go on, I just want to again emphasize something that the governor said around under-reporting on disability. When we look at number crushing in disability, it is always based on declaration. Unlike gender, it's not quite the same. It's easier to say who's a man and a woman, although there are some grey areas nowadays. But disability is really based on did the person declare or not. We see that coming through in when we look at figures in the higher education institutions. If we look on what is on the HIMSS, the information system, and what universities are telling us what their figures are, there's a huge, it's almost a 32% difference between the two. And then lastly also again that certain disabilities that are not visible are not easily declared because of stigma attached to it, for example, psychosocial disabilities. Also if we look at the new approach to disability, if your reasonable accommodation needs are met, if you are in an environment that complies with universal design, a lot of people that I might think is disabled will say to me, I'm no longer disabled. I have an impairment, but the barriers in society have been removed, and I don't regard myself as disabled per se. And I think it's an evolving concept, and nowhere in the world have I managed to concretize that. Some disabled people will always, because they say that their disability is part of their identity, but it doesn't go across in that sense. So what is our overall achievements in terms of trying to find the context of how do we measure progress? And I think one of the things for us, we set our targets quite high. And when we move into the international arena, people praise us. And we say to ourselves, why are we not praising ourselves if the world is praising us? And we try to say, what are those contexts? And when we speak to people and say, well, what are you measuring us on if you say that we are doing well relatively in South Africa? These are some of the issues that get raised. They say that South Africa led and championed the development and ratification of the convention. We were one of the first to ratify. It didn't come as a, now we've ratified it, we've got to start from scratch. It was a progressive development, evolvement of the approach taken in 1994 around mainstreaming. In terms of the declaration of the Africa Decade, it was this country that convened an international conference where it was placed on the agenda, and we managed to convince other countries to actually take it forward. We are currently assisting UNDESA with the development of a toolkit on rights of promotion of rights of persons with disabilities for Africa. We were one of four countries chosen. And the feedback that we get from them, they were here in June, they engaged more than 100 government officials. This is an example, they were engaging civil society. And they said to us, their impression is when they engage in South Africa, we continuously try and innovate and take development further. They don't get the sense that we hear some of the things for the first time, and therefore we stop thinking about it. It's a way of doing and thinking in terms of mainstreaming, and that's why we were chosen. They find that very few people say they've never heard of it. People say, I've tried this, I've tried that, this is working, this is not working. This worked and it has brought about new challenges that we are addressing. And the toolkit will hopefully be completed towards the end of the year, but we do rely on some of the other countries and the UNDESA service providers in terms of finalizing it. We recently were asked to facilitate the other African countries, Zambia, Ethiopia, and Kenya are collaborating. But they say the only real content contribution that we are getting in terms of innovation and systems comes from South Africa. The international project, they call it the Zero Project, that was established to look at innovation to accelerate implementation of the convention. They requested nominations around innovations in good practice as well as policy on accessibility. And the country has got quite few that's going into the report next year around, and I'm going to allude to some of them as we move forward. And I think part of making progress is that we must celebrate our achievements. If we only focus on the negative, we distract from what is good and what can be replicated. And that's part of where the department has now started zooming in, is what is that good practice out there that we can, through analysis and then advocacy, take further and actually get widened in terms of getting it into the systems and accelerating. South Africa is also led in terms of the whole debate around disability, HIV and AIDS. AIDS is a cause of disability, but also disabled people being more vulnerable because they do not receive the information and what can be done, and where some society has taken the lead in terms of developing some of that good practice. And then in terms of self-representation, self-representation cutting across quite a wide spectrum in its understanding, it's first of all giving a person with a disability a right to determine what treatment they want, what treatment they should have, empowered under that information, that self-empowerment of being able to control decisions over their own lives. Secondly, representative organizations of persons with disabilities that can participate in discussions, in policy development on issues that impact on the lives of disabled people, not only on disability legislation or disability policy, but broadly. So, for example, the principal in the VPSA was doing, finalizing the policy on reasonable accommodation. There was a workshop held where we brought together the sector to look at the final policy proposals and provide their inputs. And then also in terms of equity, disabled people being part of boards, etc., in terms of those decision-making levels. So what we've done is we zoomed in and say, what are those challenges that are holding back or are set to hold back the 2%? One of the issues is education. It's a fact that disabled people do not have the requisite education levels, qualifications and skills to actually take up positions in the public service in terms of minimum requirements. So we said, what progress has been made? What are we doing to improve that? And I'm not going to read through all the stats. I want to speak to more the qualitative issues, because I think we've also reached a point in the country where we can crunch numbers until tomorrow hence come, but are we actually making qualitative impact? We have definitely in the last 20 years seen a sharp increase in terms of access into the education system. To what extent that has translated into access into the curriculum becomes the challenge now. But we do know that pre-94, if you were disabled, you did not have an entitlement to claim basic education. It was not compulsory, where now it is compulsory for all children. We have seen a lot of adults with disabilities that were excluded previously accessing adult literacy programs when Harudi the program was launched. What's interesting there is that the majority of the 129,000 adults that went and completed those programs were adults with visual and hearing disabilities, which had experienced quite large number of exclusions in rural areas, and where reasonable accommodation measures are quite important, and that was provided. We have seen a slow increase in special schools matriculants. The Department of Basic Education is trying to develop and strengthen, with our support, the tracking of disabled learners in Rainstreet, that we can also see how many come out of that. We do know there are currently more disabled learners registered in the main and ordinary schools than in special schools. But the tracking of them is still problematic, and we're working on sharpening that. We have seen quite a sharp increase in university enrollments, which is also telling us that there's more students coming out of the ordinary schools. It's jumped from about an average of 5,000 now to the 2012. There was a declaration of 6,277. We circulated this figure with a breakdown to all universities. And there's a 32% discrepancy rate from students registered at the disability support units at universities and what's on the HEAR system. So again, they're working on closing those gaps in terms of students that have registered at disability support units are not captured on the HEMA system. So there's a gap there that we're trying to capture. And this work, to a large part, coming to the fore based on the Higher Education Roadshow that the department has done as a champion. We've been to all 23 institutions of higher education where we've met with the executive management to try and look at how do we, A, improve access into, but then also into the institution enrollment, but then also access to the curriculum and broader university life through reasonable accommodation measures as well as universal design. In terms of school challenges, in terms of what you are in, do you learn? We know our deaf learners have experienced particular challenges, and I know this committee engaged on this whole issue earlier this year. The curriculum for sign language has now been published, comment. They have in the interim started with training, so there's for the first time real hope for deaf learners that want to learn through sign language medium instruction to be able to start getting that, not only in terms of actual instruction, but it being recognized as a subject and as a language in terms of that they can do at a mother tongue then. In terms of braille production of learning materials, we've seen those processes over the last few months starting to move. It does remain that the capacity of braille production in the country remains challenged, and also with the changing curriculum in terms of reproducing large volumes of books. But there has been marked improvement there, and we're hoping that with the study being finalized on braille production, that we would be able to actually start looking at capacity overall in braille production, not only for school level, but also beyond that. I think we're all aware of the Marrakesh Treaty, which deals with access to print media, not only for people with visual disabilities, but anybody that has a problem with print in terms of accessing, where we have the country led to a large extent in ensuring that treaty signed in Marrakesh would give meaningful access to people with print disabilities to print materials, which they were excluded from previously as a result of intellectual property and copyright issues. And then in terms of just bursaries and access on our roadshows to provinces, we have made it a point of asking for very earmarked bursary allocations to students with disabilities by provincial government departments. We work with national government departments. We've seen departments starting to earmark bursaries. We've assisted the Department of Social Development in terms of trying to ensure that there's an increase in enrollment of social work students with disabilities in terms of taking that agenda forward. And then this one has now extended the provisioning for indigenous students that it's not only the assistive device they will pay for, but also the personal assistance, your interpreter, your note taker, etc., for indigenous students. That brought about a new challenge as we make progress, for example, in that what happens to your student that just misses a cut-off mark of NIFSA? So they do not have wealthy parents, but they are not, they're not indigent, sufficiently indigent enough to qualify for NISFAS. So we're currently working with DHET and NISFAS to say, how do we bridge that gap so that students have universal access at university level. So again, progress is maybe too slow for some, but there is definite progress on concrete qualitative that we believe will start yielding the graduates and the matriculants that can move into the public sector at a much faster pace. In terms of skill development and economic empowerment, and we've clustered these two together because if you've been disabled from birth or from a young age, you often have been deprived of the experiences your peers have been exposed to, which increases your life skill levels and your empowerment levels. And then also in terms of the schooling system, it was dual schooling system with special schools in the past running completely separate curricula and trying to find those bridges. So learnerships has been a major focus, and part of what we've done is to say, where's the good practice? We find that about 54% of disabled young people that enroll in learnerships complete. It is higher than for able-bodied. Whether it's because what happens with a lot of able-bodied young people in learnerships, they find employment halfway into the learnership, and then they jump out of the learnership. Whether it is because disabled learners can't get that employment opportunities, or whether it's that they value the skills that they learn, it's an area of research that we're currently doing to try and determine what are those exit reasons in terms of early exit or non-completion. We do know that some of that percentage of failure rate is because of reasonable accommodation mechanisms not being met. So again, we say, what are the good practices? And there, for example, the Athena Private Refugee College, which is a mobile college, came out very strongly as good practice. in fact the type of model that they roll out addressing disabled people in rural areas, where they don't uproot you from your support environment, they go to your environment, so your reasonable accommodation measures become much easier to roll out. They have also managed to negotiate with CETA a top-up for reasonable accommodation. So a blind student that moves into a learnership with them through a CETA learnership can immediately access what they need in terms of full participation from day one. And we are busy engaging with CETA saying, how do we make that the norm and not the exception in terms of good practice? It is also one of those projects that the Zero project in Vienna has accepted as an international best practice through a panel of peer review. So we're quite proud of it. You will see they've got a 95% pass rate and an 80% gainful employment rate. And it's because they're pitching it at the level where people are in the communities where they are. And it's really something that we are at the moment analyzing and building on and trying to replicate. Similarly, learnerships through the South African Disability Development Trust has been quite successful because there's additional support. And then, for example, Netcare has had a very high success rate in terms of uptake of learnerships, passing, as well as absorption that we are also looking at the moment. Then one of the other interventions is around rehabilitation services. Especially when people become disabled while at work, how do they get back? And currently, it's a provincial competency similar to education, so we're also working very closely with provincial government departments on this. We attend the quarterly education, basic education, inclusive education forum, where we directly engage as a department with provinces around challenges, around bottlenecks, and how do we improve them. We have, for example, recently seen the MEC for Education in KZN that is starting to address the exclusion of children with autism as a result of these kind of raising the awareness, engaging on possible solutions in trying to address the exclusion of children with autism from the education system in KZN. And then there's a range of interventions which a lot of people would see as employment. But we don't see it as employment, but we see it more as life skills and economic empowerment. And then around the whole context of sheltered workshops, protected factories, your self-help group run by disabled people, we try to transform them with institutions in becoming skills development centers, in saying, or cooperatives. If it's about people staying there, be permanently employed, it should be cooperatives co-owned by the workers. And if it's about people gaining skills, it should become skills registered community skills development centers to take people up to the next level. The Department of Labor's Employment Services database, we're working with them in that it's a database specifically created for job seekers generally. The current software has provided some challenges in them picking up on unpacking and tracking disabled job seekers in the database, and they're working on that. The reason why this is a good database to use is that people can register almost in every community because they register through the local labor centers. So they don't have to come far, they don't have to have access to a lot of IT, they can also do it online. They've changed the interface on the web to make it more accessible for screen readers, and I think we're about 90% with that process in terms of access. We're running it with some disabled people to check on to what extent the accessibility has now improved. And then some of the other good practice that we're looking at is in terms of small micro enterprises owned by disabled people creating jobs for disabled people, because we believe it would be a more understanding environment. And there we've managed to get the IDC to come on board, but we need to understand the IDC finances, first world economy, if we want to call it that. It's really, they go through very stringent criteria around viability of businesses before they loan money. Because if they loan you money and they're not convinced of your business plan, the sustainability of your plan, you will end up in debt. So it's been a very slow uptake of that. But again, it's a lot of people start in self-employment and then move into permanent employment once they gain those skills. The next area that we are engaging on is social protection. And with our country's unemployment levels still remaining quite stagnant in terms of slow changes in it. It is vowed that disabled people with the barriers they experience having higher unemployment rates. So social grants become an absolute have-to-have for them. It becomes literally a lifesaver. But the work that we're doing, and how do we ensure that a disability grant doesn't become a disincentive to employment? And part of that is the basket of services that come with the disability grant and understanding the cost and the economics of disability. So we're currently engaged with a study to look at those cost factors, drivers, look at the economics of it, look at the cost of doing something vis-a-vis the cost of not doing something to the state, but also looking at those cost implications for the individuals in terms of social security and social protection reform. And there's been a marked increase in uptake, also in the grant in aid. And the grant in aid is for people who require personal assistance. There are issues that we're looking at in terms of the policy disjunctions, in that the grant aid is 290 rand per month. Aid at assisting people to employ personal assistance, but you have minimum conditions of service in terms of the labour legislation that there's a disjunction that we will, out of these studies, be able to do recommendations in terms of policy reform. The last aspect that I'm going to touch is transport, and I'm going to put it in the context of universal design. There's the built environment, there's the transport. Disabled people are saying to us, even a bigger problem than the built environment is the lack of accessible public transport. So a lot of work has gone working with the Department of Transport, supporting them in their efforts. Transport policies have now accepted the principles of universal design. All transport grants that are paid for the BRT systems, for the PRASA, Metro Rail, the refurbishment, must comply with universal design. It's about the buses, it's about the bus stations, it's about the ticketing systems, and it's a battle it's a negotiation with your implementers, which are the metropolitans, your secondary cities, and also the rural public transport plan that they've got, that's as they roll out, rural public transport must be accessible. So we're happy that the policy is addressing it. It's now around the enforcement mechanisms to ensure that compliance and to keep it up. We've looked at the dial-a-ride system, which is rolled out in Cape Town, and we don't believe that it's a sustainable system, in that as more people gain employment, as more people get into schools, and everybody needs to be at work or school at 8, and everybody wants to be picked up at 5, it becomes just a completely unsustainable system on a current model. So we're saying, how do we adjust that in terms of maybe become just a local node between home and the nearest public station in terms of your integrated transport mechanism, and picking up on that. The last aspect that we will cover is the self-representation and empowerment. A disempowered person will not seek employment. A disempowered person will not pass an interview. And a disempowered person will not be a productive employee. So how do we ensure that disabled people, being faced with discrimination and harmful attitudes, empower themselves to move forward and to claim their space, to apply for those posts, to demand that they're treated equally? The first thing is around role models. And I think our country has done extremely well in terms of political self-representation, as Minister alluded to. It really gives people role models to look up to. It says to them what is possible. The self-representation on a number of our boards and our structures in terms of ensuring that disabled people are seen, are able to influence for change. We have also managed to work with DSD, and they are now starting to roll out organizational financing for organizations of disabled people. Until last year, they had mainly focused on service organizations. And they're now starting to focus on advocacy done by disabled people themselves. So there's been marked progress in terms of that shift. As a department, we've started profiling disabled filmmakers to make films also that's positive about disability. Disabled writers, and we've got our first ones published now, in raising that profile as in terms of giving hope to people. And then the last aspect there is providing platforms for dialogue, providing platforms where disabled people can represent themselves. Over the last weekend, we had the albinism conference. And I think for those that were there, to see the the empowerment that took place over 2 days in the way in which individuals were able to present themselves, to articulate the issues, and to leave there with information and hope and messages back to their homes. It's amazing. I'm convinced just out of that one platform we provided, you would now see this, people with albinism starting to apply and claim their stake in terms of positions. A lot of the same people are saying to you, I don't apply because I do not believe I will be successful. It costs me money to apply, and if I don't have a certain level of hope, I will not go into that expense. Way forward then, Chairperson, and wrapping up, I think for others to finalize our cross-cutting policy and legislation. Our disability rights policy is on track in terms of the development. We're in the regulatory impact assessment process in terms of looking what's our obligations internationally, what are our constitutional obligations, what guidance does the National Development Plan give us, working from the baseline that we established in the country report, and then saying how do we enforce equality of outcome on specific key focus areas. That would then be taken into legislation. Similarly to which Ranji alluded in terms of the Wedgie Bill and that being enacted and then the formulation of regulations following that. We also believe that there's space for strengthening of other cross-cutting legislation, for example, the Promotion of Equality Prevention of Unfair Discrimination Act, in terms of developing regulations that would address some of the issues there. If you look at some of the hate speech issues, some of the accessibility issues, that with regulations in that act, we can already strengthen the enforcement mechanisms. In terms of strengthening our machineries, in terms of strengthening coordination, the Wedgie Bill, as Ranji alluded, already have mechanisms in their setting norms and standards. The disability policy, disability legislation will do likewise. That says if you are a disability rights focal point, you're not just a disabled person picked up from the street and you're now the expert on understanding, mainstreaming in systems, legislation, and disability-responsive budgeting, but that you need to be equipped, that you need to have qualifications and experience in getting that done. So we would strengthen that. We're happy that we've consulted, that we've identified weaknesses, and that we are on the road of strengthening functioning of our machineries across all three spheres of government. In terms of rolling our sector rights-based monitoring and evaluation strategy as part of the mainstreaming framework out. We're happy that we're on track in terms of developing and inculcating those rights-based indicators in the current government-wide monitoring system. We've worked very closely with Statistics South Africa and other statistical bodies on what is the disaggregation that we need and how do we get reliable statistics. Kenny in his presentation also alluded to that. Economically active population is not known in terms of disability, so we're working on streamlining some of those factors. And then in terms of the MTSS, what are the targets that we want to see in there? What are those impact indicators that will be measured? If we get that right, it cuts across all three spheres of government, and we start singing from the same page in terms of our national agenda. And then lastly, again, something that Randy touched on is around strengthening research into priority areas for disability equity and gender equity promotion, rights-based research, not medical research. So that will happen by itself, but looking at rights-based research and getting those publicizing those reports. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much for the presentation. Possibly before we even start, let's proceed then and take the provinces. Okay, Minister.
Sorry, Chair. I just wanted to take continue from Lydia and say, especially on gender equity, we think the following strategies will help us move forward. We will identify those departments that are still below 30% for women in the SMS and look at developing plan with them to ensure that they improve and get to work towards the 50% quickly. We're also looking at developing a pool of women in middle management for SMS positions by building capacity and training, working with the DPSA to ensure that we have women who are ready to take up these senior positions. Also, we are saying that DPSA must come up with a retention strategy where we can work together that will help us to retain women at SMS level, because sometimes once they are good and they are high up there, they are easily taken even by the private sector. We also are working with the networks, partnerships, and women's organizations, formations, such as Business Women Association, to ensure that women's organizations are also training and focusing on capacity building, not only in government, but preparing women for board membership. Lastly, we are saying that for internship programs, we must continue to focus on young women, therefore, and also including Techno Girls programs that we think will assist us get women up there. We also want to encourage all departments to participate in the Women's Management Week, which we think has gone a long way in enhancing participation in the public service. Finally, Chairperson, we are going to monitor the decision that was taken by Cabinet, as DPSA has reported in November last year, that all DGs and HODs should have in their performance agreements a KPA on the attainment of disability and gender equality, and ensure that there must be consequences with non-compliance with this decision by Cabinet. Thank you very much, Chairperson. I'll leave it at that.
Yeah, thanks, Minister. Actually, maybe just to be clear, it was when the matter of non-completion was raised, we had to go back to the correspondence. And I must say the correspondence was very clear. The presentations were going to you, Minister, but we'd get copies. We could just see to us so that we know. Because it helps to have those that we give them to. This is a content advice to just write them for us as members while we read them. What are the key things that came? So ideally, we're expecting that they go to you, but we're still going to allow the provinces to try saying that all presentations be submitted to consolidated, and then you can see the problem. I'm actually raising this one. We're still going to have another follow-up meeting based on this, but that will be determined also by members in terms of if we agree at the end of it, so that we sort of take this process to a particular level. But I will actually negotiate and we'll see how this meeting goes at the end so that we take another meeting. But can I then proceed at this point to deal with the request by the Minister to request the provinces that are here a 5 to 6 minutes, not too long, just to hint on a thing that they believe are quite key and critical. We'll see if we can make it 10. But let's leave it within 5. If it's too pressing, I'll listen, and but 10 will be the cutoff. Okay. If the introduction again is still critical, as well, if also there is also another delegation. Let's take it that way.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Dr. Mkabela is going to do the presentation. She is the General Manager of the Human Rights Directorate in the Office of the Premier. She is responsible for the following units: the Office on the Rights of the Child, the Office on the Rights of People with Disabilities, Persons with Disabilities, Office on the Rights of Senior Citizens, Office for the Status of Women, and the Human Rights Protection Directorate. We've got a long presentation, but we'll try and summarize because most of the things were done during the two presentations. She'll summarize.
Okay, let me check other provinces that are going to present so that they start to prepare and come nearer. How things going to present? Which other province? Yeah, you can in the meantime while they're presenting come nearer and be next to the mic so that you can present. There are some spaces here. Gauteng, the other province? Cape is going to do that as well. Okay, any other province or only those three? Okay. Yeah. Okay. Let's proceed then. Yeah.
Thank you, Chair.
As a background, we just say disability issues and gender equality issues have been elevated to the cabinet level. In KZN, we have a program of action for persons with disabilities, which was adopted by a cabinet in 2011, and since then it has been quarterly monitored by cabinet. And last year in August, the Women's Empowerment and Gender Equality Strategic Implementation Plan was also adopted by Cabinet, and it is monitored by Cabinet quarterly. What I would also like to indicate is that we have a provincial profile, a gender provincial profile, which serves as a baseline for planning, intervention, and monitoring. Okay, the presentation looked into the key indicators that are used for mainstreaming, implementation and monitoring, being employment, unemployment, political representation, participation, positions held in decision-making bodies, access to education. We looked into this from a holistic point of view because employment, equity, also, there are factors relating to that, whether they contribute negatively or positively, and also the presentation looked into what interventions the province is taking in order to ensure that we improve on equity targets. And then on disability, the key indicators mainly are for look into employment and health and accessibility. But mainly we look at it also from a holistic point of view in terms of enabling environment, but also factors that contribute to not achieving the targets. The status in terms of statistics, women in politics, that as the executive in cabinet, we have 50-50, excluding the premier. And then in the legislature, there are 39% male and 61% female, yes, and then 61% male. And the speaker is a woman. When you look at the graph, you can see that KZN in 2004 we were at 26%, and in 2009 we were at 36%, and now at 2011, we're at 39%. Therefore, there is progress, although slow, but we are moving towards the right direction. And then in local government, women are at 17% in a ward level, and then generally, they are at 44%. The public sector. Our statistics are based on the statistics we had at the end of April 2013. As indicated, we are at 40.2% in terms of SMS level, and we have departments that have made improvements since last year. The Department of Transport moved from 50% to 54%. I won't mention all of them. And the Department of Economic Development moved from 23% to 29%. And the leading department that has moved, it's a quarter, it moved from 38% to 42%. And then in terms of persons with disabilities, as of 30 April, the province was at 0.20%, the department leading being the Department of Arts and Culture at 1.76%. And then we have three departments that have 0% indicated over the Department of Community Safety and Liaison, Economic Development, and the Royal Household. What I can also mention is that there are three departments with SMS members, that is the Department of Human Settlements, COCTA, and Transport. These statistics are presented in Cabinet. That's why we see a slight shift towards the right direction. And the the intervention, as mentioned earlier by the Department of Women, Children and Persons with Disabilities, is that Cabinet is monitoring, but also cohort, the committee of HODs, are monitoring the statistics. And there are intervention plans. The first one was that there should be departmental strategies as to how to achieve the targets, and also there must be an audit that identifies employees with disabilities within departments, and databases being developed by departments and provincially. But the other ones that HODs should not employ male SMS members. If they do not comply with this resolution, they have to explain why they have done so. So there are other programs that the Provincial Academy is rolling out, mainstreaming short courses for managers, and we've also capacitated CFOs so that they understand that gender-responsive budgeting and disability-responsive budgeting is also critical. So now I'm moving to factors that lead to not achieving the targets. I'll be very short, Chairperson. The main one being the department, let me say access to education. Enrollment in KwaZulu-Natal at the primary level is near parity, at 0.97. The key problems is that girls' enrollment in terms of in science, engineering, and so on, it was alluded earlier, is still low as compared to boys. Then this suggests that smaller numbers of female scientists, engineers, and so on, we won't have them in the academia and business and in the public sector. This also applies to persons with disabilities. These are statistics showing undergraduates in terms of women and men. You can see that in terms of science, engineering, and so on, there are fewer, in terms of management, you have more women. Education, you have more women, and in science and engineering, you still find, because the situation is changing, you still find girls more than boys. But when it comes to postgraduates, when it comes to science, engineering, and technology, we have fewer women than men. Okay, now I'd like to just look into education with respect to disability. One issue that was raised is the scarcity of teachers with disabilities who will serve as role models. And then the intervention was the premier's disability priority project was started in KwaZulu-Natal, where 7 office-based educators were assisted to register the Bachelor of Education, these are disabled teachers, to ensure that there are teachers with disabilities in schools, and then 25 special school educators were also given bursaries to ensure that we have those teachers and also assist them in terms of employment. And educational intervention, the other one is that 60 disabled learners were trained in skills development courses on computer, electricity, catering, and so cane weaving, etc. And 30 intellectually disabled learners were also skilled in current making. This encourages that people with disabilities are also employed, but also they are self-employed. To ensure that people with disabilities are skilled and they are educated, the Department of Education also has provided, in terms of enabling environment, transport for persons with disabilities, buses, and also this has seen the enrollment.
We're saving the entire meeting. Take your cell phones, everyone.
I don't know. Yeah, it's interesting. It must be. Okay, no. Can I request, you know, we're losing numbers now because some of them are two times in terms of programs. And I'm going to lose out on the engagement on this. That's why I just can question that to sum up. I know that there is eagerness to deal with this. Possibly we should have organized. I realize now I should get a way of getting the provinces also to really do the contribution, was that significant thing that we also want from our side that comes from the provinces. But at the moment, like I said, I'm definitely going to negotiate the members, the follow-up. I would suggest that the members will either say whether it's fine or not and we'll further discuss it at other levels. I'm strictly requesting it so much.
Okay. Are we proceeding?
Well, I have already given provinces 10 minutes each, and I would actually request them just to zoom into the tent.
It's interesting to see that
yeah, I know you, Honorable Dwight. Hold on. Let's get this to be done, and it just note it. We'll actually zoom into it.
Okay, what I can say as a summary, we can go back to slide number 5. Just saying the mainstreaming of gender and disability in education and health services, in economy, is being rolled out and it's being monitored at a higher level. The poverty that is experienced in the province, we have statistics and we are intervening in terms of statistical data as to where is poverty rise and who is affected and what kind of services and how does that lead to people not being skilled and not being employed. And the gender-based violence issue as well is being tackled in school and also in schools, in communities, but also in relation to public servants. I will stop there.
Thank you. Okay, can you proceed to Gauteng?
Thank you, Honorable Chair. And, good day to all the honourable members as well as the minister. My name is Daniel Bulia, the acting head for gender, youth and disabilities. My colleague will do the presentation. Obviously this place isn't too accessible for me. As you can see, it's a challenge for me to get up front there as well. So I'm raising that right up front now, honourable chair. But what I would like to say in terms of Gauteng, we've adopted a policy in 2010 for the gender equity rights as well as the disability rights, which has been approved and adopted. And one of the challenges that we find within Gauteng is that our stats on employment equity with disability is showing quite low, but we're busy with the cleanup ourselves. And if we complete that, currently we're sitting at 1.6% of people with disabilities. But if we do the cleanup on the PERSEL with Department of Finance, as a province will be past 2%. I'll hand over to my colleague, Momo. Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you. It's quite a pleasure for us to be presenting, and actually have put quite a long presentation, but I'll try and consolidate the presentation in terms of what Gauteng has been doing. Taking from what Zane has alluded to, what we have actually looked at is just look at how we have looked at gender and disability in terms of the political outcome, and we only focus actually on the outcomes of government, but also out of that we then developed a gender, youth and disability DOA around that. And very quickly to say that we then looked at the short-term and long-term planning, and obviously focusing on priorities. I'll just jump some of the slides. And safe to say that maybe what we then look at over the period of time is that we had to look at tangible results, and that is why it was important for us to look at the POA and come up with a gender, youth and disability POA. And for us then we looked at the delivery value chain of what is really happening in terms of the priority that we have, and focus on the results based
in terms of planning, in terms of budgeting, and also of reporting. In that way, we would then pick up if there are any other problems within the department and come up with corrective measures and intervention around that. And within that, we'll then go to departments and come up with the gender-wise gender programs from the departments. Obviously, within the departments, we'll then prioritize in terms of what they're actually doing. Okay, and for us, let me quickly go to the... Okay, here it just shows that we have really aligned the political outcomes to the Millennium Development Goals and the gender and development priorities. And, you know, that on its own, it will then really show us how we have aligned our programs. Quickly, we'll go straight to the achievements. Okay. Just in terms of the achievements, safe to say that housing has gone into a process of looking at where we are now. Increasing, there was a large number of girl learners who are passing a trick. And safe to say, in the last year, we were number one in terms of the matric results. And out of that, we then looked at how girl learners were passing a matric around mathematics and science, and it showed that there was a quite increase in terms of that area. And in terms of the ECD and grades R, over 88% public primary schools have grades R, and out of the 66,706 children accessing ECD, only that number, 32,593 are girl learners, and also really shows that the access of girl learners into education, it has really improved. In terms of teacher development, that is the number that we have actually covered, and free nutrition over to over 1 million learners. And fortunately for us, we can safely report that all the top performers, you know, we're getting them from low-fee schools. The whole analogy of saying that children coming from low-fee schools are not performing has really changed in terms of what we are picking up. And they were actually awarded bursaries to access education, and we are sitting at 51% of the learners that we have offered bursaries from that group. Dignity health also is one of the topics and maybe one of the areas that we're looking at. And we say to say that we really are rolling out the program. And the issue of cleaning of toilets, which is very pertinent for us, is that sometimes research has shown us that girl learners are not able to, in terms of safety at schools, toilets are a very private place, and girl learners are not able to access school and toilets. So we have taken a conscious decision to say that we're going to come up with a program around cleanliness of toilets, and that is actually being rolled out quite well. Social workers is a challenge. You know that we're not producing a lot of social workers in the country, and even for school social workers, but we're then saying that within the schooling system, there would be school-based supporting that would really assist learners with challenges. Obviously, we are not performing quite well there, but there's the sense that we're looking at in terms of just doing the work around that. Just around, I won't go into, okay, in terms of the training of educators who are able to teach subjects in the sign language, we've actually reached the intake by 825%, because that has been rolled out within this year, and this has been an issue that sign language has been sidelined for quite some time. And 800% of the 18 targeted food service schools have been established, and they are running quite well. Okay. Of the hearing aids that we have provided to schools, that is the number. We are at 104%, and obviously it shows that in terms of the percentages, we are really moving fast and furious around that. Let's go to issues of health also. It's just one of those areas that by virtue of how health has been structured, we are then safe to say that we are really performing well around that. In terms of pregnant women who book for antenatal care before 20 weeks, we're really at about 40%. I'll just highlight some of the stuff because the presentation is big. As we all know that this is Breast Cancer Month, there's rigorous work that has been done around that area, cervical cancer screen. We've reached the 50% versus the 65% target in the quarter two. Also, issues of mom grants and the family planning policy program that is really underway for us to get the problems that we're facing in housing.
Let me just go quickly to issues of sexuality education and also the issues around extracurricular. We are busy doing the work around that, and there's also comprehensive workplace programs in departments. There's also mass education and mobilization and work-based programs, because what we have then realized that if we don't deal with these problems at the world base, we are not really able to deal with these issues comprehensively, and there's a target to say we really need to go down to the world base level. Around issues of safety, safety say that for social crime prevention, there's about 460,000 men and boys in gender-based violence prevention programs. We've got a youth desk at 83 police stations in the province, and there's about 90% of community policing forums that are already operational and patrol that are already deployed in schools and at tourism points at the juncture. Issues of violence against women, which is quite a thorny issue for all of us. We safe to say that we have 122 functional VECs in the province, and obviously the rolling out of the Ikhaya Lethemba model in 3 communities, and that is well underway. The women's safety programs has exceeded 133%, 122% of care community-based safe houses, which are greenhouses, have were established, and safe to say that this is one of the best practice models that has been shared, you know, in other provinces, even globally. And this is one of the problems that we proudly talk about when we, you know, in this area as housing. Maybe safe to say also to say that around issues of job creation, some of the issues have been raised by GWCPG around EPWP, and we've actually tried to look at also we had about 456 women on child support, which are also involved in cooperatives. So we're looking at cooperatives and aligning them with what we have within the province to say if we have got the young women's development programs that we are running, then we'd really encourage them to come up with cooperatives, so that there's that kind of a balance of young women seeing cooperatives as one of the alternatives. Skills development is also one of the key areas for us, and we're looking at that and working around those kind of areas. I'm trying to rush, Chair. Safe to say that for people with disability, we've really, we are at about 0.11 of the expected 5% around people with disability in terms of support. And when you look at the strategic procurement, especially during the disability month, that's the time when we really focus directly in terms of supporting people with disabilities to get this from government. And surely within, as we report, in the next month, we'll then see the rise in terms of providing support to people with disabilities around procurement targets. The agricultural sector is also one of the areas that we're looking at. 40 women agricultural cooperatives have been supported, and obviously when I say 40% is according to the target that we have set for the province. Around areas of agro-processing also, there's about 25 women who benefited from this area, around the areas of such as the Ontario Army Park. 23 women farmers have been supported, and that's going to be expanded. The program is going to be expanded around that. Obviously, around food security, that is the number. Human settlements. This is just one area that is also an area that we're looking at to say 9450 housing units and 535 have been delivered today. I'm just going to finish. Safe to say that maybe for us as Gauteng, we have really, there has been a lot of achievements in terms of what the house would observe. In terms of access to basic services, there's a lot of improvement. And also just deepening democracy, which is another area that we need to look at to say that there's representation of women at ward committees, and the targets have been exceeded at that number. And obviously there's a lot of training that's been provided to women councillors around that area. And safe to say that the target 100 was a target in 2013, 2014 alone, but obviously we've really superseded the target as it is. Yeah, maybe the other areas we share the presentation so that the house could actually inspect what is happening there. Maybe I can just follow that so that I don't take more time. Okay, thanks. Okay. The okay. Should I go on? Okay. Basically, the green doors is within a community, a house is earmarked for purposes when a woman is going under stress. There's there's violence in the home. Then we then identify a particular house where the woman was actually going to that house and be just supported for that time, and then after that would be then taken to the centers that are available in the area. Yeah.
Yes, members, we should have focused differently in terms of getting the presentations of provinces. I'm sure there's quite a lot that you are going to miss once we sort of summarize. Let's get an authentic.
Yeah. The copies can be secreted. We'll appreciate them.
And then, okay, don't force yourself. If you don't want to present, you can really leave it. But this is your space. Let's get it from you.
One mic at a time. Yes. The honourable members, Chairperson, and the Minister, I don't know what is the advice, honourable Chairperson, should we? Because we have said another presentation and we have an extremely watered down one. We can deal with the watered down one. Yes, we will run through that. Okay. It's very clear. Yeah. Yes, what has happened is the we have the Directory Special Programs, which is located in the office of the Premier under Program 3, Policy and Planning. It compromises the following units: Office on the Status of Women, Office on the Status of Office on the Rights of the Child, Office on the State of Persons with Disabilities, Moral Regeneration and Transformation. And it will soon have the youth and senior citizens being added. On our presentation, we had our organogram, but we can go past that one just to save time. The objectives, I think, yeah, that's it. You can move on, ma'am. Move back to the second slide, the third one. Yes, that is just the how the organogram looks like, which we are in the Premier's office. And then you can move to the next slide, ma'am. We are really not going to go through the objectives of the office, the enabling instruments. Can you move that? We have the women empowerment, the gender equality strategy and implementation plan, which is in our office. The aim is the purpose of the women's empowerment and gender equality is to provide an integrated framework for managing and accelerating gender transformation through effective planning and monitoring of women's empowerment. And then we move to the next one. We also use the national framework. On disability, we have the provincial program of action of disability, which was there 2007-2008, which is being reviewed. And we are checking how much of, which is on the plan, which has been achieved, which will later give a little bit of progress, which has been done according to that. We have also the service delivery framework for persons with disabilities in municipalities, which aim is to give guidance to municipalities how to deal with issues of disability and to have a practical document which they can use on a day-to-day operational level. We move to the next slide, Provincial Diversity Management Training Manual. The aim of the manual is employment of women and persons with disabilities to assist the employment equity manager, any other person is tasked with the training to have an understanding of diversity management and be able to train other staff members on diversity and draft his own diversity management strategy for department or municipalities, which means what we have looked at, we have the whole manual and then we have the CD, and on that CD we have a dummy presentation which we are giving to municipalities and departments. The employment equity, can we move to, employment equity policy and plan 2010 to 2013, we have a provincial employment equity forum which is actually meeting on a quarterly basis to check on the targets of the employment of women and persons with disabilities. If you move to the achievements, provincial gender machinery has been established in its function. Gender focal persons have been appointed in all provincial departments. Their levels vary from assistant manager to deputy director. All municipalities have special programs offices dealing with a variety of issues as presented by the ministry, that sometimes we just get a lot of things being put into those units. OSW has been running a lot of coordination on awareness affecting issues of women and girls linked to these commemorative days. The 16 days on no violence against women and children and International Women's Day. OSW assists municipalities with induction processes of the implementation of the gender policy. All GFPs trained on gender conceptualization. Training manual has been developed on the implementation of gender mainstream with departments and municipalities. Capacitated departments on the implementation of the 8 principles. Strengthening shelters of abused women. OSW also coordinated economic empowerment programs in collaboration with the Department of Economic Affairs. Disability. The office facilitated training on sessions of disability mainstreaming for provincial departments and municipalities. The office conducted awareness training on programs of the UNCRPD with the departments, and moved to the other page. Awareness raising programs were partnership between South African Local Government Association on the implementation of disability framework for local government, South African Social Security Agency on the relationship between disability and HIV and AIDS. Terms of reference on disability machinery were developed in July. On the next slide, the disability machinery, among other six to serve, we have decided...
Nathan, if I'm going to stop it.
Yes.
I'm sure everyone else agrees.
Yes.
It's a perspective of what how you're dealing with your thing. I think we can distribute that, we can read it,
okay.
You can just understand it.
Yes.
We're sorry to have disorganized you, but that's why I was saying don't really force yourself to present it. If it's information of this nature, it's okay. We can sort of let it come together with all these others. Once you suggest how we're going to move forward, we'll also outline how we approach it. But we also really appreciate the willingness to really deal with it.
Okay.
Are the key things, maybe very pending things, which we can count as progress that you want to say? Otherwise, if you
yes, maybe we'll just deal with the statistics there, which you went to.
That's fine.
And then we... Can you move to the departments to the other people? Yeah. To look at the employment of 50% women at senior management level and 2% of persons with disabilities across all occupational categories, transport and safety, 8.5 women and 0 persons with disabilities, economic development and tourism, 33% and 3% persons with disabilities, sports and culture, 11.1 women and senior management and 0 persons with disabilities, corporate governance, 33.3 and 3.4 persons with disabilities, agriculture land reform, 36% and 0.37, education, 38 and 0.01, health, 26.09 and 0.10, roads and public works, 28 and 0.26, social development, 50% and 0.73, Northern Cape provincial treasury, 37.5 and 1%, Office of the Premier 44.83 and 2% persons with disabilities, environmental and nature conservation 5% and 0.96, provincial treasury 57 and 0.85. Across the whole department, including municipalities, we are standing at 2.7, 2.4. And persons with disabilities 0.36. Honorable Chairperson, I don't. let me run. You see the Northern Cape has the least population. Thank you, Chairperson.
Okay. No, but also, okay. Now let's then proceed, honourable members, looking at the time. I'll quickly allow the members to interact with the presentation. I'll give them that space. I know there's a 12:30 meeting, which is very urgent, so that at that time we'll have had a fair discussion on all these matters. Honourable Kekani? Okay. I'll say there's a hand from Honourable Kekani, Honourable Detoit, Honourable Malulega, Honourable Mare. Okay, I'll take the other immediately. Let me start with the ones that have start. Honourable Kekani, somebody must put them a mic for you there, so that and then, yeah, thanks, Memon. Sure.
Okay.
Proceed.
Okay, Chair, the quick question I wanted to raise on the first representation. Can I go ahead?
Yeah.
No, I think the presentation are very impressive because they show we're moving somewhere. At least we're not just doing job opportunities for the disabled 2% and women 50%, but we're also preparing them to be skilled, to be ready to occupy those jobs when they're available. Because remember, the tradition was that women must not go to school in order to keep that dependency. And also the disabled were relegated to the background. So if you don't prepare, if you don't skill them, the one area I want to check with the presenters is the LAC College, whether we're really putting enough emphasis for both women and disability. Remember, that is where production happens. Carpenters are taught to design. They can open factories for manufacturing furniture. And God are the days where we're just asking for employment. We should also prepare them for production, to open up their own business factories and produce whatever is needed. Women today can do bricklay and produce houses. So I just want to know for both disabled and women whether we're training them enough for the areas of S&T colleges where you train artisans who must be the ultimate goal to real production and run business. Whether it be textile industry, manufacturing of curtains, manufacturing of clothing industry, footwear, all those, if they are not trained there, we're depriving them of a very big opportunity of the production level of preparing them for the labor market, actually for business opportunities and the whole production, which is a big question in South Africa. Thanks, Chair.
Thanks, Honourable Kekani. Yeah, actually, it's my opinion that and what just came up, which is very critical. Let me proceed to Honourable Detoit.
Thank you, Jefferson. I'm just going back to the first presentation on the percentages of the status quo, the gender. If you take a graph and you plot the percentages, you'll see that in 60% of the achievements lies in the representation between 34% and 38%, which is quite large. It's spread, in other words, it's not very wide. The median is around 34-38%. If you look at 60% of the departments. If you look at that's our gender, and on the disability, it's a different percentage there. We look at 50% is lying between 0.36 and 0.41. So there, so it seems in both, if you do a statistical analysis, seems at this point that that we're hitting a glass ceiling an invisible ceiling. Why doesn't, you know, the mean doesn't move forward to 50% yet? Okay, yet. All right. Now, I'm just worried that we will enforce a 50% by putting in, I'm not talking about disability now, on the first agenda, we'll put in people that's not been fully trained yet or hasn't had the opportunity to finish education, or it's maybe raising children, or, you know, that type of thing. We know there's always this raising children and staying at home, posted, if you put out your education, that type of thing can influence us. I'm just worried that we know what we must do. I'm just worried that those factors are creating this glass ceiling. Because if you look at the statistics, it's not wide, it's narrow, and it's all over, it's between that percentages that I mentioned. So it shows you there's something, it's not exceptions, it's a general thing. Yeah, he said language consultant. So, I'm disability, my language disability is coming in. So I think we must just speak to that, just very shortly, about the backlog of the training and education situation. I see we did address it, but it's just a concern that we mustn't push too quickly and end up with people not suited for a job. That's all.
Thanks, Honorable Detroit. Honorable Maluleg.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, Honorable Kekana, I have taken my words. I wanted also to comment the department on the work done. But on the Department of Public Service and Administration, taking into consideration the location of gender units in the department was not uniform. What is the department view on the matter? Okay, and also wanted to check with the minister, though we have a success, I don't want to say stories, success work done by the department, but we are still having a challenge in terms of people with disability in workplace. You know, last time we have seen some talking on the TV that they are employed in the front desk just to give a department that there are people with disabilities, but in some areas they are not deployed. Also, in the how are we monitoring the conditions of work? Where they work? Are they satisfied with the environment that are working there? How are you often, Minister, with your department, maybe monitoring the situation where people with disabilities are in the employment? Also, we commend the ruling party in terms of the statistics shows here on the political women agenda and disabilities, because we know that is the work of the African National Congress, which is our responsibility. We don't blame anyone not to dealing with the challenge that we are having, but it's also our responsibility to take South Africa on the, when they talk about the MDGs, all political parties must take that responsibility to be proud of addressing the challenges we have in our in our country. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Honorable Maluleke, followed by Honorable Mare.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, you must bear with me. I'm not going to be so nice about this whole thing. I've served in the Committee for Women, Children and People with Disabilities when I started in Parliament. And I must be honest with you, some of the rhetoric that I've heard in those days as well. Some of the excuses I've heard in those days as well. So my question is, what has changed? Excuses, further excuses with regard to people with disabilities. And I don't think we must ask, constantly come up with excuses why we do not meet the standards and the targets. One of the problems is, and it has been mentioned, no consequences for non-compliance. And as long as there are no consequences for non-compliance, there will not be compliance, because nobody is going to force them to comply, because nothing is going to happen. I remember the day when we visited the Reserve Bank and asked them about people with disabilities, and they would say, yes, we have got people with disabilities. They work in the mint, you know, where they stamp the mints. So I was so furious, because is that how they see persons with disabilities? Is that how they see the abilities of persons with disabilities? The stat that has been shown here in terms of school leavers and even further education proves the point that I've always said. They have got abilities, and people look, unfortunately, towards their disabilities. They're always looking for excuses. I must say, I find the excuse in terms of classification, if I can use that word, very unacceptable. Absolutely unacceptable. It was the same excuses in those days. You know, none of us wants to be classified in terms of race, but we are. There are many ways that you could do it. Often those people that so-called don't want to be classified as disabled, they are registered with SARS in terms of their disability. Some of them are registered with Department of Social Services. So there are many ways. I'm involved with Sport for the Disabled, and I can tell you, even those that you say at tertiary institutions, they might be clever in terms of their minds. Why do they compete in an event for a cerebral palsy? I mean, you've only mentioned basically hearing and some physical disabilities. I don't think you know what the definition of disability is. You must look at it, and you proud yourself on the policies and the ratification of the United Nations Convention on the Rights of People with Disabilities. Fantastic. My question is, so what? Even within the State Departments, and I can tell you, I've had many interactions with SOS on how they look at people with disabilities. I remember in this Parliament, in the days of President Beke, where I've said, no problem with the targets in terms of women, but what are you doing with regards to people with disabilities? And with excuses and promises and excuses and promises, and so many years later we are even worse off, if I look at the figures. In this Parliament, I've said to Minister Gordhan one day, I said, you're making a soft target in terms of SARS. To use one example, because people with disabilities that pay tax claim everything under the category of medical, now SARS has gone and identified everybody with excess medical expenses as red flag clients, taxpayers. Now, I remember the letters that were sent that says that I'm one of them because I've got a disabled child. And it made me feel like a criminal. So why criminalize people with disabilities? And don't just come up with excuses. I mean, there's nothing that infuriates me that you constantly come up with excuses why you do not have people with disabilities. And constantly with excuses of how people want to be classified or whether they apply. Rubbish. So I'm afraid to say that while we have got policies,
Is the rubbish parliamentary, honourable member?
I would say if we are in the house, it's probably not. But I mean, but it, okay, I'll withdraw that. But you know, it doesn't take away of the quality of what has been said. So that basically equates that. So really, we must stop with setting targets and then looking for excuses. It is fantastic what we do for women and equity. But I don't really see, and I don't experience, and I work enormously with people with disability. How many times they will approach me, and I will refer them to a specific person at SARS that can help them. There are still enormous discrimination, and it happens in public service and in each department, and I'm afraid to say that the minister that is present here, and I mean, you know, it's a huge task. But her focus and her comments was predominantly about women. Fantastic, no problem. I'm looking to see where government will put their money where their mouth is in terms of people with disabilities. And we cannot constantly come up with excuses. And remember, people with disabilities, look at the definitions. In the United Nations Convention, the Rights of People with Disabilities, there are many SARS, there are so many acceptable definitions of people with disabilities that you cannot hide behind a so-called what, who and what are they. I mean, with all due respect, that is not acceptable anymore. So my plea is just today, is, next time, they don't come up with the same things. We know that. But you're constantly repeating what you said behind. And the province is the same. Really, and we cannot get a situation where we are still below 1% employment. If we are the biggest employer in South Africa, the government, my goodness, the abilities are there. Don't come over and say that you don't know where to find them. Please. It's not acceptable. It cannot work.
Thanks, Honorable Murray. I'll take the next hand, and I've noticed that Honorable Moret's hand was already up.
No, so thank you, Chairperson. I think a lot of emphasis has been, spoken to in terms of accountability and all that. But I would like to take another angle to say, I think the problem is much deeper than, what we think, because for me it talks to the education in our country as well, to say what is it that we're doing for the girl child, what is it that we're doing for people with disabilities in this country, because it starts there. If we empower them from the group, from the ground level, then they will, get opportunities, notwithstanding that they still, have to be, because we don't want to comply for the sake of complying. We need to ensure that people that we put in place, certain places, are actually skilled, have the competences to do the job and all that. I remember some stage while I was still working at Bara to say, why can't we, I know some will say it's illegal and all that, but to have a sort of a state agency with names of people with disabilities that can be put in different places. Because we know a lot of people are disabled physically, but they're intelligent, they've got degrees and all that. But because of their disability that they cannot walk, it means the company must have ramps and all that. They don't get employed. And I think it's not fair. So for me, it's deeper than that to say those who are already, sort of qualified or looking for employment, how do we deal with that? Those who are still at the ground level, the children who are growing up, what is it that, as a country, we're going to do to empower them? Because then it's going to be a continuous cycle. It's a vicious cycle that every time we talk about the same issues, but nothing in terms of solution. And, accountability, I think that there needs to be a very high penalty in terms of, complying. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Honorable Murray. Honorable Mukhali.
Hello, Ramundula Stool. The first issue, Chair, is I'm worried about the premiers who didn't send representatives to say how serious do they take Parliament. Because they should, we do understand where the premier cannot come. But when that premier doesn't even send a representative, then it sends a different message. And it is wrong. It is not acceptable. They should respect Parliament. And Chair, I would suggest that we write to them, we want the reasons why they did not send representatives if they could not come. Because the we know it's Wednesday, it's Cabinet Day, but the minister is here. Really, what is wrong with them if they cannot come? More people are employed at the provincial level. I think they should come and explain why are women not at 50% and also why are disabled people not at 2%. Their behavior is not acceptable. But Chair, I always say the truth shall set you free. With the statistics we can see where we are going. We can see where we are lagging behind. To say enough is not yet done. But then, where are we going? Is it enough to just write out an advertisement and say that disabled people are encouraged to apply? Is it really enough? Because that is what you get on the advert. Disabled people are encouraged to apply. And also, how then do people who are visually impaired get the advert? If they are especially advertised by the public service, how do they get the advert? to say, here you can apply, because we need that flow of information so that they'll be able to apply. How do they get the information? The other thing is on issues of you see these things that at the lower level where you can employ a disabled person, where Chairperson will talk about the early childhood development, whether is it tailored to also take a girl child or a disabled person at that level? At ECD level, how are they taken up? If you go through it, most disabled people go to school while they're 8 years or 9 years, is then that they start schooling, because there was nothing been done. So how do they cope at the different centers? But I think if from the Department of Public Service and Administration, if you could just get, maybe you tell us, you've written this policy, there's job access strategy. How is it faring in the department? How are they taking it? What is it really that is each and every department in the public service taking it up, trying their best to use that policy? Maybe we'll be able to move somewhere. Maybe we'll be, the 2% will be something that we no longer even talk about 2%. If we have to look at percentage, it will be at a much higher percentage. And also the relationship of different departments with institutions of higher learning, where they could be able to get disabled students who are studying there, just to take them into their companies, because you know there are private companies who go and make that friendship with different higher education institutions, and they just pick and choose wherever they want. They won't take everybody. Maybe if departments could also use that opportunity to get them there, and then also encouragement at high school level. What do we do when you talk about disabled people and so on? Because this is going to be a battle that we're going to fight for a very long time until everybody understands, because somewhere it's a matter of attitude. That is why I was worried about the premise. You know, to me, if someone is talking, it's not taking the issue of women and disabled people serious. It comes secondary to anything. So that is why whether they send someone or they don't send anyone, it's not. I know if not all the premier's offices have the office on the status of women, office on the status of the disabled persons. I know all of them have those offices. I think we have sent representatives from there. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Honourable Hali. Noting that there were no other hands. Honourable Chairman.
Thank you, Chair. I'm concur with other speakers. The only thing that I can say to the DPSA, I think the DPSA need, I don't know whether they are waiting for the legislative bill which is going to be passed, that they can have teeth to bite. I think they need to force now. They didn't use other measures, how to force the departments or the provinces that they don't want to come to the party. I think now they need to force, because you can see outside there is a lot of crime, especially in the disability. So I think the DPSA, they need to have teeth to bite. That's the only thing that he says, Chair. Thanks.
Yeah, I think it's also an important thing that you are raising, Honourable Tom, because if you heard from the presentation, of course, there has been also a raising of if there are no consequences when things do not happen, what do we do? And it's one area which is a major concern that we definitely have to, you know, maybe as a, I don't know whether it should be a legacy, within the legacy report, as a priority, or possibly we leave while we've gone somewhere, particularly in terms of suggesting how best to handle that. It's one of the major issues as well. But just some quick comments as well. It's that
The issue of the gender machinery is a major issue which has developed in order to deal with transformation of gender relations in the country. And as a matter of fact, of course, part of why we wanted this meeting as well is to assess if the gender machinery is still relevant, is transforming society, but also looking also issue of disabilities, and disabilities even was hence being a priority on our agenda because it's not met from time to time. So we have noticed that maybe the issue from the presentation that we locate now the performance to the DGs, in the contract of the DGs that they have to also perform in terms of delivery for disability and delivering for gender, it's in progress, I think. In other words, it should be there. But it's not going to be then be left there. We normally work with Public Service Commission and this committee. And normally there will be, when the performance are done for the DGs, we'd want to be closer as Parliament. It was the issues that were promised. For instance, if there's something like this, we'd like to see if the performance is done, whether the DGs do get the remuneration.
Bonuses.
Or not, based on this, because we want to also watch. That's how we normally help Public Service Commission. So they do come up with this evaluation, they do come up with performance contracts, are they signed by ministers on time and so on. The only way to compliment them is to say, after if you have a deadline approved by cabinet, approved by everyone else, if it's not met, then it comes back here, then we're able to interrogate and put in perspective why it wouldn't happen. So on this matter, what gives us pleasure is that now it's located somewhere at the DG's higher level, and we would watch, we would be part of watching. Now, I'm actually raising this because we also interact with Foresight as the committee. We sometimes interact with Foresight in other areas, and we did make a promise that from time to time we'd need to bring that Foresight so that we can, many things that were raised in the past were not to our satisfaction answered, and we never said that this is well and good. We still had areas, and we also wanted to commission the Public Service Commission to sort of deal with that report and see where we have weaknesses. Yes, of course, in the past we used to have, for instance, gender focal points who could be picked up from anybody who is a sweeper to any other level who would go and interact. We come from the culture of we've been in the offices and status of women where we worked. We really realized, and in the province where I was working, you find that once the DGs come and meets once the head of department meets with the DG of the province, a different story is told, because now they talk about, how best it is. They programatize it and give it a highly technical, but once it comes to the gender focal point, anybody could see that anybody, the co-point representative, anyone goes, and there's no technical. I agree with what came from the presentation. That is one problem. And that is why we want to also assess the gender machinery. If it really is really assisting us in terms of what it was planned to do. So those are some of the things that if now the DGs, the heads of the departments, heads of the provinces are actually, monitored in terms of this, possibly we might get it right, but it must be coupled with the issue of the consequences, which must be tightened, because if then it happens and then, they come here, we say whatever we say, we go and still, that thing happens again, it's a problem. The moratorium that came from the presentation, that sometimes it hampers progress, I think it's quite problematic. Not acceptable, actually. We can't have, we need to have a way that even if the moratoria put across board, but do we then deal with this differently of the disability? Do we deal with it differently? Then we have a problem with how moratoria has been pronounced while we have this problem, and therefore we do think that possibly that will be the responsibility of Public Safety Administration to monitor that and also advise how this should happen. But at the end of the day, Public Service Department of Public Safety and Administration, when departments don't comply, that you're harsh with you. Sometimes you can't even tell them that you don't have the authority to beat them up if they're not complying. But therefore, then, if there is moratorium identified, it came in on the presentation, and that it has to be corrected. Because it's part of, now some of the things that hampers the progress. This needs to be treated as a special area, and there's a lot of that has to be done because we haven't complied. The other issue that we actually comes on board. It's also the Public Education Administration, DPSA, would really need to see, because we know that Palama is moving to become a school of government. I'm sure the first program that we'd like to see is how did we design the program of disability. You know, it has to be interrogated. We want to see if it will make sense. It will complement all the issues that have been raised on all this presentation, which also are problematic and need to be covered. So that would see the rest of the curricula, but we need the curricula for disability, and we should sort of develop a program. We need to get it before Parliament at any given time where we can get space, because it definitely will be zooming. We'll be zeroing in terms of our work, but we need to get a hold in terms of dealing with it. And of course, it's good at planning phase to see whether the plans are taking us to where we want to go as a country. Okay, one of the issues that I know that this Mr. Biela, I'm sorry, I don't know the content advisor for women, children with disability, and they also Julius here. There's a lot of work based on this meeting that has happened, which we need to sit further down and do a lot of planning. There's quite a lot, and we don't want to miss out on a number of other things. So therefore, I have to still sit. But surely this matter cuts across, you know. It's something that all other committees would like. It's something that we'd like to recommend to the chair of chairs, that this program, these are the things that comes out. We'd like, even when we're not there, not coming back to Parliament, we need to put it, to place it to the agenda of Parliament to proceed with other things, you know, even in the coming Parliament, so that we don't lose where we are now, but to also improve in terms of how we handled this meeting. For instance, they would still need to pull labor once we deal with it. Well, we have public service and legislation, we have women, children, and persons with disabilities. We always work with FOSAT. We also have, our cluster of governance, because the Auditor General will help in terms of having identified what we planned for, what the budgeted for had been implemented. You know, SCOPA as well will be critical. You know, we need to sort of bring those things together, and therefore we're definitely going to reinforce that and also motivated to a cluster approach. Because the government won't make it alone. We must just force it down as well to reach and even surpass the 2%, particularly of disability. And therefore, we need to then sit and come up with a very tight program in terms of dealing with that. There is an issue around the disclosure of the entire disability and so on. I'm sure we would need to give it a perspective. It's neither here nor there. It still needs to be tightened. Even Honourable Members did raise it. The curriculum for the sign language, the braille. Okay, I think we need also to elevate those issues that we've realized that they focus on them. But lastly, the issue of advocacy. I would need us to, where we need to advocate, was we don't have to start it also at this level. We start it at a home level. You know, sometimes a lot of other parents have children, they don't know where to go and so on. We need to start to open the access points, particularly around disability. And that one, I also put it as a challenge to the public representatives who are members of Parliament, that there's a lot of work that we need to do where people don't find themselves destitute owning a problem which shouldn't be such a burden to them, but there must be a number of all ways to assist on that. But then advocacy program would challenge particularly the Department for Women, Children, and Persons with Disability through the Minister to assist us with a program that is specific to advocacy around the areas of disabilities, which needs to be implemented as a matter of every time should be there. The constituencies should work on advocating as well, and finding out how many people around there, who wants what, and so that we can assist with the services that are there. And therefore, we would appreciate if across board we identified who are at a level of going to school, who has been doing onset disabilities, what is it that we can do, etc., etc. So that one we can take quite quickly. I'm actually raising the thing before the minister, together with the department, response, so that all other areas where there are some answers, we can then be filled in. Also noting that our time has been, we no longer have a sufficient time, and that most members will be leaving to the other next meeting, which is at 12:30. Okay. And we have to sum up, maybe let me allow the responses. But just to indicate that we will have follow-up meetings based on the we will communicate with the department where we are going to have it. Need some days. I was looking at it. We need a day where we focus. But with COCTA, COCTA is part of this cluster, by the way. COCTA looking at most both district and municipal municipalities, you know, so that you can see the challenges in the rural areas, see the challenges in the in the urban areas as well, and then we'd move on to that one of foresight with Public Service Commission, where the DGs that where Public Service Commission will have actually this should also go all the presentations and all, but including what you want to the Public Service Commission, where we also deal with it, get a presentation and get Foresight to respond. But also, we'll be looking at the following ministries, the Minister for Women, Children, and Persons with Disability, Public Service and Administration, Monitoring and Evaluation, Performance, Monitoring and Evaluation, Labor. We would actually also zoom into those ministries where we'd be doing some serious work in terms of this program. That you talk to women and persons with disabilities. Can I then call on responses in that department? But obviously noting that we might not finish everything here, but the program have to unfold. We need to thoroughly deal with those things. I understand and I appreciate that the provinces were even willing to deal with the presentations. You know, they were eager to actually tell their side, and therefore we're going to plan it better. You know, where it counted, they didn't count provinces. We'll also have provincial focus, where we give them space and platform to actually deal with this matter thoroughly. And therefore, along that, let's get a brief response that actually knows there is a program.
Yes, thank you, Chairperson. I want, first of all, to thank honorable members for their comments and their contributions, which I think some will assist us going forward. I'll start with Honorable Kekana, who has raised the question of training people for production, for creating their own factories or small businesses, creating jobs for themselves, and by using the FTs training that is available. I want to assure the member that indeed, we are working jointly with the Department for Higher Education and Training. The Deputy Minister has also visited, on a roadshow, visited most of the tertiary institutions, including FETs. The Department of for Higher Education has set aside an amount of $77 million for young people with disabilities who can go to either university or tertiary, including FETs, to do whatever trade or skill they would like to be trained in. So that includes young women, young people generally, and people with disabilities. So, but the minister has complained that the uptake is not very good. So I think what the chairperson is saying, that we should go to our constituencies and encourage young people with disabilities to go and apply, go into tertiary or FETs and apply for the funding that has been certified by the minister. Honorable Dutoy is saying we must go slowly, slowly. We must not push too quickly. I think the other members are not agreeing with him. They think we should push, and we think we are slow, and I would agree that we have got targets, we have got deadlines, we have to make sure that we meet those deadlines. We are not doing badly on women, we are at 39%. We have, however, a target of 50% by 2015, which is not far away, so we have to push. And we do have women, as we have seen, many girls are going to tertiary, many girls are graduates, young women are graduates, so we can't say they are not ready for senior management. And the same for people with disabilities. We have many graduates, we have many people who have improved themselves who are looking for jobs. And as we do the roadshows, we emphasize the fact that we're not talking about receptionists who are just sitting and answering the phone or secretarial jobs. We also expect people with disabilities at senior level. We have a few DDGs, for instance, in the departments, some of the departments, but I must say that in most departments, they are still at lower levels. I think the location of the gender units, Honorable Maluleke, we are addressing that through the wage bill. The bill is going to look at the qualifications, it's going to look at the levels, it's going to look at the placing of these units so that they are at decision-making level, they are able to report to the DG where decisions are made, and those people are suitably qualified so that they are able to engage senior managers in the departments and in provinces, and are able to take decisions and are placed at a level where they can report either to the minister or to the DD so that we can fast track implementation of the mainstreaming programs in all the sectors. I think we are saying that in terms of monitoring the working environment, we are doing that. Can see the honourable still here. We are doing that. We have had a survey in the public service where we have been looking at the environment and where people with disabilities are working. Is it conducive to retain those people in the public service for a long time? And that is what has informed the policy that we referred to with the DPSA, that DPSA is developing the reasonable accommodation policy, which is almost finished, is ready now to go to cabinet, and hopefully after that we'll be able to develop legislation that will enforce reasonable accommodation, that will enforce the employment of people with disabilities, working also with our disability, transversal disability policy, which also we intend to develop into legislation that will enforce accessible employment and will ensure that we domesticate the UN Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities. So what we're saying is, yes, the change has been slow. Implementation has been slow, but we are saying that with ensuring that the performance agreements of heads of departments, of DGs, accounting officers, have this key KPA on 50% and on 2%, but also by ensuring that we develop legislation that will enforce the rights of persons with disabilities, we believe both the public service department and our department will be able to fast-track implementation. Honorable Moore, on education, I think slide 9 has clarified what is being done. We starting with universal access to early childhood development. That policy was adopted this year, 2013. We are also looking at inclusive education policy. We are working very closely with departments of social development and basic education to ensure implementation. But as the chairperson has said, it's also about awareness, not only in government, but also in our communities, our children in the schools, our principals, that they must open up those schools and ensure that there is accommodation. If a child on a wheelchair is on the second floor class, the teacher must change that class to the ground floor where the classroom will be accessible for that particular child. That is what inclusive education is about. But we are also looking at sign language. The Minister for
basic education is introducing the curriculum starting from 2014 and braille materials for learning. I think I've already talked about the batteries that have been made available, but also through the Department of Higher Education and other departments. The Department for Rural Development is running a number of programs for youth, for women, for people with disabilities, and have skilled quite a number of people in our rural areas, including people with disabilities. In terms of how, where to go, who to contact, the department is working with the Department of Labor. We have developed a data bank working with disabled people's organizations where we are given the names of qualified graduates or people who are ready for employment, not necessarily graduates alone, and we're working with the Department of Labor to ensure that in their data bank as well, they include people with disabilities. And we have been approached by departments, and we have supplied them with a number of qualified personnel who are people with disabilities. So we also would be interested in members giving us the names of those people, the department or the Department of Labor, which also has that data bank to assist not only in government but also in the private sector to find employment for our people. I think the question of declaration is important, Chairperson, because people who do not declare cannot be accommodated. And you find that a person develops problems at the workplace simply because there is no reasonable accommodation for them. But as long as they do not declare, they cannot get the support that they require. So for us, declaration is important, and we would like to really request this committee in particular, Public Service and Administration, to assist us together with the Department of Public Service to encourage members of the civil service to declare their status if they have a disability, because that will also assist us in informing policy. I think I will stop there, Chairperson, and ask the both Department of Public Service and my department to add to that. But I would like Chairperson to request that I be excused. I have many, many questions in the House to answer this afternoon.
Okay, now before you leave, then both you accept that you should leave. We have actually delivered on the work of the committee on this invitation. I think possibly you heard the member saying we really appreciate that. Because I know Wednesday, our committee is on a very complicated day. And Wednesday, you've got cabinet committees, you've got cabinet. So many times and often it's difficult for ministers to make it for this day, and we really appreciate that you're here. Thanks, Minister, you are excused. You then proceed, but you are summarizing the department, as you see that you've already gone through our time.
Thank you, Madam Chair and honorable members. Thank you very much for those comments and questions. I think the Minister has covered to a large extent a number of the areas, and I'm just going to summarize from DPSA's side. The first point we just need to draw attention to, as the question comes from Honorable Detoyed, was to the effect, I think we need to note, as of 30th of June 2013, 58% of the public service is women, and there's 42% male. But as you go up the ladder, the very small percentage of women become junior managers, and the majority are male. So I think the argument of saying there's insufficient women in the public service to move into the upper ends is problematic. I think there's sufficient number of women in the public service. The problem is we don't give them sufficient exposure at those lower levels to prepare them for senior management levels. And I think that's the challenge we face as the public service in terms. So there's sufficient women. It's how we prepare them for senior managers, and we then appoint them at senior management level. The location of the gender unit, I don't think DPSA has a specific view, but in terms of our analysis and assessment, where the gender units are based within the Premier's office and where they are located within the heads of departments, the DG's office, we see better performance. So the understanding and the implication we can draw from that is if they are centrally located at a decision-making point, we get better results at the end of the day. So our view should be at that central point going forward. Yes, targets, I think we all accept, targets are simply measurements to enable us to measure how well we're doing or not. But to achieve targets, there's a lot of work that we need to do behind the scenes. And I think today's presentations has clearly illustrated there's a lot of work that's been happening broadly, not only in the public service, in relation to both women, young girls, as well as in relation to disability and people with disability in the public service. And at this point, I think what's important is the alignment between the work that is being done by the Office of Women, the Office of People with Disabilities, and so on, with the public service partners in terms of employment. Because what we tend to do is we put people into programs. We support them in the programs, learnerships, internships, and so on. But that does not translate into employment in the public service. And I think that gap is missing and something that we need to start focusing on as DPSA as well as provincial and national departments going forward. And I want to indicate the enforcement of compliance is a challenge across the public service. The Public Service Act itself, in terms of Section 16, I think it is, provides for reporting mechanisms. So in other words, if departments do not comply, the department, the DG for DPSA can request a DG of province or head of department of a department to submit a report. Or the minister can request an EA or MEC to report. But that's about all. The minister then reports to parliament as to who's complied and who's not complied. There's no real enforcement beyond it. And I think the PAMBL will give a little bit more teeth in terms of going forward. And we're hoping that some of this information we need to share through the Public Service Commission, which has an element of a directive in terms of enforcing some of the a direction in terms of what needs to be done. But the area of enforcement is an area we're worried about. The Performance Management Development System, the MPAT, is also assisting us improve levels of compliance and improve levels of reporting across the public service. The implementation of the job access strategy, we must acknowledge at this stage, there's very poor implementation across the public service. The document is there, policy is there, gives the strategy, gives mechanisms to assist. Based on the reports that as DPSA we've received, 22 provinces and 22 provincial departments and 3 national departments have reported. Our implication, very poor levels of compliance in relation to the job access strategy. So it's an area we are aware of as DPSA, and it's an area we're dealing with as part of our ongoing advocacy and workshop with departments in terms of building the implementation of job access strategy across the public service. Madam Chair, the question around the program on disability management or the course that is run by PLAMA, we can definitely make that available. I know it's continuously being reviewed, but the current course material can be made available. Thank you very much.
Okay, now maybe, do you still want to say something? But maybe because we are not finalized, it's a program that is ongoing, and also noting the time, let me take this opportunity to thank everyone who made it for this meeting and thank the members for the engagement, doing their job actually, but surely to indicate that it's a matter that is still on our agenda, high on the agenda, both these matters, and therefore the departments, the provinces, and the ministers that are involved here shouldn't get surprised when there will be consistent follow-ups. There are issues that we've identified, particularly with advocates, we should actually appreciate if we can get a quick response from the department's content so that we can be able to sort of deal with advocacy at the constituent level. They cannot be deferred for any later time, but it should consistently and continuously happen wherever we are. We just make the area of access, you know, giving people information, where they can get information, where they can be assisted, particularly on the disability side. And I'll say, of course, the issue of disability on both the committees that are here, it's something that it started when it was really shocking us and it was making most members very, very annoyed. It is gradually growing, but we haven't got anywhere so far. We haven't got where we can say we're satisfied, and because of that, we'll consistently trouble the departments on this matter. Until such time, we feel comfortable and then we can relax a bit on that, but we cannot at all because we are not really happy. And surely it's one matter that it's number one priority, you know, and like we're saying, now we're making it at last a problem, or that Lazarus should actually worry about it, so that when the auditor general report must clear in terms of the statistics for disability, Papa can see whether money is spent, you know, for the reasons budgeted for, etc., etc. And I believe we can get it right. There's no way that government can permanently fail to meet just the 2% statistics. I'm sure we can be able to. I mean, know that it's not an easy matter. It involves so much. It has to happen as the commitment. And I would really like to close it at that note, thanking all of you for being here. Sure.
Maybe it's the level of education, you know, academic education or whatever, or getting married.
Then we can do the survey on them, you know?
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.